Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking about the budget, and oh yeah, the budget, and a bunch of other stories that came up over the weekend. I hope you had a wonderful holiday weekend with this, the 4th of July, one of those holidays that I think are special in everyone's heart. We think about the Declaration of Independence. We think about, really the founding of the country, the whole patriotism thing right there. I keep checking my email box and I keep getting this. I've been getting it for several years and I've never really talked about it on the program, but it's one of those really nice rewritten pieces of history. And, I kept hearing about the whole rewrite of history. I kept hearing about the whole God thing. One of the TV stations must have put some soldiers, saluting or doing whatever over part of the God thing, which really ticked off the God Squad. On purpose, not, I don't know. But one of these frames that the right has to keep pushing out there, the mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media has to talk about. But I got to be honest, it really highlights the rewriting of our history. Because I do try to, during this holiday, look at the Declaration of Independence, kind of remember some of the history that I learned as a kid, talk about some of the things with my family, kind of understand the holiday and why it's so important. And I keep getting this email, and I've gotten it a number of times, and I'm sure you've gotten it too. It starts off, have you ever wondered what happened to the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence? And it goes on to say that, five were captured by the British as traitors and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. 2 lost their sons serving in the Revolutionary Army. Another 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 fought and died from wounds or hardships of the Revolutionary War. They signed and they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. What kind of men were they? 24 were lawyers and jurists. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers and large plantation owners. Men of means, well-educated. But they signed the Declaration of Independence, knowing full well that the penalty would be death if they were captured. Carter Braxton, it says, of Virginia, a wealthy, wealthy planter and trader, saw his ships swept from the sea by the British Navy. He sold his home and properties to pay his debts and died in rags. Thomas McKean, they met McKean, was so hounded by the British that he was forced to move his family almost constantly. And he served in Congress without pay, and his family was kept in hiding. His possessions were taken from him, and poverty was his reward. It goes on with a whole bunch of other stuff. It's just a whole rewrite of history. And it made me, it's one of these things that, you know, makes me go, hold on a second. I got to check some of this stuff out. And you look at the first thing that they say, five of the signers were captured and they were tortured by the British. They were traitors. Well, had they been traitors, the British would have hung them. That was the penalty. So they weren't hung. In fact, the only one that died, the only one of the people who were captured and were signatory to the Declaration of Independence was a guy named Richard Stockton of New Jersey. And the thing is he recanted his signature while in jail. The other four were captured as prisoners of war, not for their signature. And none of them died in captivity, which, again, you know, one of these nice rewrites, it makes them sound, look, they died for their country. Never, it didn't happen. It says 12 of the other, you know, 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. And I ask the question, only 12? Here's the thing. Most people during that time had their homes ransacked and burned. It was war. That's how things were done. They went, they took the shoes, they took the food. They burned everything else. Goes on to say two of them had their sons captured. They lost their sons. Two were captured. Yeah, a few saw their sons captured. None were killed, as can be ascertained. I mean, none of the things I've seen and none of the reports that I've read have that out. They say 9 of the 56 died and fought and died from the wounds and hardships of the Revolutionary War. It is true that 9 of the signers died during the Revolutionary War period. None of them from war, though. And only one of them died because of being wounded. And that, I don't really know that you can say was part of the war. He was dueling a fellow officer, and he was shot and killed. You know, it's this nice rewriting of history. And look, I want the founders to be these larger-than-life icons. The reality is there were people at the time who said, you know what, we want self-government. We want self-rule. We want to get away from the king. We want to get away from a monopolistic East India trading company. Carter Braxton, the guy from Virginia that they talked about, the wealthy planter and trader, saw his ship swept away by the British Navy. Understand, he was a shipping tycoon of the time. His business was shipping, had boats. What's the first thing a Navy does to the opposition? Oh, yeah, they destroy all their ships. So you want to destroy their supply lines. It didn't matter that he was a signatory to the document. It had nothing to do with that. He would have lost his fortune regardless. Had he never heard of the Declaration of Independence, he would have lost his fortune. So, you know, it's a lot of convenience. It's a lot of, well, you know, and I love how they finish it. You know, freedom's never free. You're right. It's never free for the poor people. It's never free for the people who have to fight and die for these things. And I would make the argument that maybe the Revolutionary War was the last time that the rich actually in this country suffered the consequences of war. Because they had to pay for part of it. So, you know, at the end of all this, you know, and this is what bothers me. You look at the newspaper, the history lessons, we get an F in history. Because we've stopped educating our kids. And we've spent so much time fighting over what history means. We spend so much time rewriting things to fit a political agenda. You know, read the Declaration of Independence. Read the Constitution. Those are important documents, especially for yesterday being the Independence Day, the 4th of July. And yeah, you know what? I agree. You know, John Adams was right. I want to see explosions in the sky. I want to see fireworks. I want to see that stuff. But you know how many people I heard, and I'm no historian. I am not, you know, some scholar on the history of the Revolutionary War, but I heard numerous people saying that John Adams was their favorite founder. And the only reason why is because he liked fireworks, evidently. Nothing about the Alien and Sedition Acts, nothing about the fact that when he came into town, the towns were supposed to, you know, fire off cannons in his honor. I guess he liked fireworks that much that wherever he went, he wanted them around him. And I'm really just kind of amazed. at this, and I think you know, the Glenn Becks of the world have done this. Now everybody has to have their favorite founder, like their trading cards. Like now we have founders trading cards, and you can pick your favorites. Maybe we should do that. You know, maybe we should have founders trading cards, and maybe we should all have a favorite. But maybe we should know about it a little bit. Just a thought.
Wing, the conservatives always say, you know, we ought to be like the founding fathers in their original intent. You know, your girlfriend, Michelle, claims, she claimed that the founding fathers ended slavery as we know it. Well, I hate to tell you this, Michelle, but I believe George Washington, when he died, had about 100 slaves. I believe at one time, the father of the Democratic Party had over 300.
And had some children.
Yes, from a black woman. And the other one, which I just chuckle when I hear this. Oh, the founding fathers got to get back to their Christian roots. Well,
they were
deists. The truth is they were deists. They believed in a God, but only in the big picture. They weren't Baptists. They weren't Presbyterians. They weren't Catholics. Organized religion wasn't their shtick, but they did believe in a God in the big concept.
Well, I mean, you know, not to generalize, the majority of them did. Some of them were of the different denominations, but the majority, George Washington, you know, the famous story of Washington on his deathbed, not calling for a priest or a minister, but calling for a watch so he could time his heartbeats. You know, it's that kind of mentality. But yeah, I just had to get that off my chest because I got that email like five times today. And over the weekend, it just kept hammering my box that this is the kind of patriotism we need. And I disagree. You know, I look at Kentucky. You know, this is the kind of patriotism we don't need. Down in Kentucky, the Tea Party had their little, you know, their little get together. And great for them. Excellent for them. Great to, you know, to do what they're doing. Evidently they were selling t-shirts, with, I'm a racist. Yep, I'm a racist, right on the front. And, you know, is it a joke? Maybe. Is it ridiculous? Absolutely. You know, it's my right to be racist. And I kept thinking, you know, maybe in this country what we do need is people to wear more t-shirts. I would like to know who the racists are. I would like to know who the people who, it would make life a lot easier. And I go back to a friend of mine, that I worked with for many years who grew up in Georgia as a black man and said, look, I liked it a lot better when they'd walk up to you and call your name right to your face because you knew who the a-hole was. You know, now you got people who are, you know, smiling out of one side of their face and backstabbing in the other. It's, you know, maybe if we all had t-shirts, maybe that's a platform. We could run on t-shirts for everybody and you could put who you are on the t-shirt. Anyway, I hope everybody had a great weekend. I did. Sunburn and fireworks seemed to go well for the big holiday, Independence Holiday, and I got sunburned to no end. I'd like to hear how your holiday went. What was the big attraction? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. We did take a couple of days, and you know you need to have that and recharge your batteries, get everything moving forward. And we are back and ready to roll. Did you have a good weekend, Jake?
Yes, I did.
What'd you do?
Well, the usual. Ate a lot.
Well, that's not a holiday thing for you.
Ate a lot. Watched a lot of programs on PCN concerning the Battle of Gettysburg, which is the usual. Had a good time.
Well, there you go. That was exciting. Thanks for sharing. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the budget. What are your thoughts on the budget? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Changing America for the better. The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. This winter sports season could be the National Hockey League's opportunity to have the spotlight all to itself. With the National Basketball Association's players locked out and the National Football League staring down a potential short season, sports fans won't have many other options. If the NBA lockout continues into the regular season, it could benefit China. Kobe Bryant and a number of other players are considering taking the show overseas for an exhibition tour. Meanwhile, the NFL has fewer than 3 weeks to reach a settlement before rookies are scheduled to head to training camp. If a settlement can't be reached and get rookies set to train, that will very likely have football fans looking at, if they're lucky, half a season of pro football. The two sides of the football battle have been working all weekend to get a potential new settlement agreement on the table, but formal meetings won't start until today. The answer to solving state deficits could be flipping the current tax structure. Doug Cunningham reports.
Flip it to fix it. A United for a Fair Economy study shows that states could wipe out budget deficits and pay for public services into the future by just flipping the regressive tax structures to more progressive ones. United for a Fair Economy's Karen Kraut.
It doesn't have to be this way. States could really produce a large amount of revenue. They could have an economically sound and sustainable tax system if they flipped their structures, asking that the wealthiest families pay as a share of their income what the lowest income families are currently paying as a share of their income in state and local taxes, and vice versa.
If state tax systems were inverted like that, Kraut says 60% of state income taxpayers would pay the same or even lower state income taxes while preserving public education and other services.
Everyone in the lowest income quintile and the second quintile would see a reduction in the amount of their income that they're paying in state and local taxes. On the flip side, the wealthiest families who are currently not carrying their weight in terms of the share of income they're paying in state and local taxes, they would be asked to pay proportionally more. The idea of constantly giving wealthy people and corporations tax breaks is going to lift all boats has never proven to be true.
The full report on flipping state tax structures to wipe out deficits is at faireconomy.org. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You helped to turn America blue. Now let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show.
This is time.
Rick 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, I had a great weekend, you know, the whole sun fun, but also, you know, spent a little time talking to the kids about my 9-year-old brought up slavery, and the whole that conversation came up again because during school, you know, they had gone on the Underground Railroad tour, which I think is a great thing for them to, you know, at an early age to be exposed to. So, you know, good stuff. Let's go to the phones. We got Mike on line one. How you doing tonight, Mike?
Good, Rick. How's it been, man? I haven't talked to you in a while.
Having a great time here.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I wanted to throw a little bit in on this whole slavery thing during the Revolution. You know, it's probably not widely known, but George Washington had a slave with him through the entire war. It was his right-hand man.
I think his name was William Lee.
You know, all I know is he was a fairly short gentleman, and they considered him to be the second best rider in Virginia behind Washington.
Yeah.
Because he was always riding with him, he was always with him. That was pretty much the norm. Washington, yeah, did have a lot of slaves. And what people don't seem to understand is that the colonialists did not want to abolish slavery. They did not want to extend amnesty to slaves and say, hey, listen, we're going to go ahead, if you fight from the colonial, you know, if you fight in the colonial army, what we're going to do is go ahead and, you know, offer you land and freedom and everything else. We weren't willing to do that. The British were. The British basically put up posters telling slaves, listen, you come to our side, you fight for us, we will give you land, we'll give you freedom, we'll give you everything. So we basically, you know, the idea that we abolish slavery is just, it's foolish.
Well, again, it's back to this rewriting of history.
Correct.
You need it. You start off with a frame, and then you work your way back. You know, it's very Orwellian. You go back to what Winston Smith's job was in the book 1984. It's doing just that. Here's the frame. Go back and rewrite every article from all the way back to fit this frame.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just frustrating to sit back and listen to people talk that way. And, you know, I couldn't even bring up that kind of an argument with a straight face. There's just no way, because you know that it's not true. You absolutely know. You know in your heart it's not true.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Given the fact that, you know, I was just reading an article recently about the dismal state of our history lessons. You know, some of these, this one institute, gave the Lexington Institute in Arlington, Virginia, gave our history and civics students an F. Because we just don't seem to know very much history anymore. Maybe we've spent too much time on technology and not enough about learning how to think in the past.
Well, nobody's reading anymore. That's the problem. Everybody's watching the idiot box. And it's unfortunate that our society has gotten away from, you know, reading and actually spending time researching subjects. Instead, we believe what some uneducated and, you know, honestly, somebody who has no right even bringing the subject up, you know, we're going to believe what this guy is telling us on this screen. And we're not going to back it up, you know. And it's just, you know, the American people are really doing this to themselves. We are the main cause of the pain because we're letting it happen.
Yeah. You know, what bothers me is we get this stuff in sound bites. We get this stuff in small amounts. Like, the only reason I brought that email up is I've been getting it for years. And this weekend was just obnoxious. I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, someone who doesn't have the time to, you know, maybe go look for some information or look through it, just takes it at face value. Yes, these are our founders. They are heroes. They're great people. And they were, for their time, great people. But you know what? Not like this. This is really kind of putting them on a pedestal almost.
Well, you cannot take away from the fact that they put their butts on the line.
Nope.
Because they had a wonderful existence here. And all they had to do was toe the line. And they said, you know what, no, we don't accept this, and, you know, we're willing to sacrifice, and that's amazing. But the ruling class in this country is completely the opposite. They are not willing to sacrifice one bit. They want everyone else to sacrifice because they have this sense of entitlement. Like, you know, we've gotten to this lofty position through our dads and through, you know, we haven't earned our money, but we deserve to be put up on a pedestal and told that we're better than everybody else.
We're exceptional.
Crap.
We're exceptional.
Rick, it's a load of crap.
Well, it's
and
a nice
anybody
story.
That can spend 5 minutes on the internet can look this stuff up and get this information showing that that's not the case on a government website. It's not like, you know, you or I putting the website up and basically espousing our personal beliefs. You know, these are government statistics that, you know, we're behind in everything, behind the entire industrial world on everything, education, healthcare, social, you know, our whole social structure is just, it's really in bad shape, and it's following in our infrastructure. You know, I mean, our social structure is falling apart as quickly as our infrastructure is, and we're just really, you know, I feel so sorry for, like, your daughters. You know, I wish I could tell them I was sorry, but I had nothing to do with this. But the point is they're going to look at us 30 years down the road when they have kids and they're sitting in the same position you are. They're going to say, what in the heck happened? Why wasn't my dad doing something about this? And luckily, you're going to be able to look and say, well, you know what? My dad was doing something about it. But unfortunately, he's, you know, one man and, you know, he really can only do as much as he possibly can.
Yeah, I'm afraid that they're going to put me in a chair somewhere every day, you know, hit me with a stick. Look what you've done!
Oh, whatever. Hey, Rick, the other thing, too, I wanted to bring up was you guys were talking about the privatization of, you know, basically some of our infrastructure. And I have, you know, are you aware that there's four major companies, corporations in the world that deal in water infrastructure?
Sure. The Thames Water, I think, out of Britain, the one from France, American Water Company from...
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Suez. They're two French
Suez,
companies.
That's it.
And then you've got RWE, which owns Thames, which is also, they're German. And then, of course, you got, you know, everybody's favorite, Bechtel.
Yep.
And, you know, Vivendi, which is Veolia. You know that these guys have privatized some of the largest cities in our country, right?
Sure, right here in the area, American Water.
Yeah. Well, you know, Pittsburgh is actually in bed with Suez and with RWE.
Beautiful. Well, you ever see the movie, and I forget what the name, I think it was called The Take. It talks about Bechtel going into Bolivia and how the people couldn't even
booted.
People couldn't even put a bucket out in front of their house when it rained because that was their water they claimed.
Well, you know, they were getting their bills were running $20 a month, which once Bechtel got in there. But, you know, American people, they say, well, $20, come on. Well, these people are only making $100 a month.
Right.
Okay, so you're spending 20% of your income on water, something that your body can't go without for a week.
And I've been saying
without water for a week, you're dead.
Yeah, I've been saying for the longest time, you know, water's the new oil. I mean, we're going to be fighting wars. I mean, you look down in Florida and Georgia. I mean, them and Alabama were about ready to go to war over Lake Lanier.
Yeah. Well, Atlanta, you know, and the one thing that I want, you know, anybody who's listening out there is take that to heart when somebody tells you that it's a good idea to privatize some of your infrastructure. The city of Atlanta went into a 20-year contract with Suez, which is United Water. And within 4 years, the water was undrinkable. They spent millions of dollars trying to find the pipelines because when they sold to Suez in turn fired all of the public employees who knew where all these pipelines were. And he brought in these folks who had no clue where any of this stuff was at. So the infrastructure essentially went to heck in a handbasket. The water turned brown, and people had to boil their water before they could use it. And on top of that, and this you're going to love, the CEO of Suez in the time that they were involved in that, his salary increased 708%.
Beautiful. I mean, that's the American way. I mean, we've exported that to France. Look how
wonderful. Well, yeah, I was going to say, and here we are, this country who just supposedly despises France because they wouldn't go to war with us, and you know we renamed French fries Freedom Fries, and it's just like, yeah, but your water system is owned by a French company, and your bill ultimately comes from France, buddy.
You know, we did the same thing with the whole Freedom Fry thing back during World War One too with the Germans, though. We had Freedom Kraut, or Freedom Cabbage. That's what it was called. It wasn't sauerkraut. It was Freedom Cabbage. Isn't that beautiful?
Well, you know, I just really hope that we start to get it because it is getting painful out there. My tuition just went up 9%. They're saying another 9% next year and 11% the year after that.
Wow.
So, you know, by the time I graduate, it's thank goodness it's not going to have gone up that high, but it's getting really out of hand. And, you know.
Hope you're not taking student loans for that.
Hey, no, I have no choice. But the point is we're just dumbing our society down. You know, so all these rich people who don't want to pay taxes to subsidize education, they're screwing themselves because later on when they need people to take care of them, there isn't going to be anybody around. Or the people that are going to be there are going to be incompetent. And their lives are going to be in these people's hands. So they're going to be counting on these people to making sound and solid decisions in their behalf. And you're going to have an uneducated workforce.
You ever seen the movie Idiocracy?
Yeah, I did. And I laughed until I cried with that movie. It was great.
You know, it could have been done better, but the premise is right on. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to be living our lives in little three-second sound bites.
Yeah, you know, and listening to vulgar noises and thinking that that's the funniest thing we've ever heard.
And wondering why, you mean putting toilet water on the crops? That works?
Well, it's brought to you by Carl's Jr.
There you go. So, I appreciate the call, man.
Rick, have a great night.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I love that movie. You know, the smartest guy in the world was, you know, pretty much brain dead. He was the most average guy at the time, went back and went into the future, you know, a couple hundred years. And they were putting sports drinks on the crops and wondering why the crops weren't growing. And he suggested, why don't you put water on it? You mean like out of the toilet? Yeah, dummy. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
At long last, America's overdue withdrawal from Afghanistan has begun. The tide of war is receding, declared President Obama as he announced that 10,000 troops would come home this year and 20,000 more next year. That tide has been a deadly one for our country. 1,562 of our troops killed, more than 11,000 maimed, many horribly, their lives shattered, and almost half a trillion of our tax dollars siphoned from crucial needs here at home. And what did we buy with this precious outlay? An Afghan government that is flagrantly corrupt and embarrassingly inept. A nation that remains impoverished, largely illiterate, anarchic, split into factious ethnic groupings, and roiled by an unresolved civil war that's been simmering and occasionally boiling over for nearly 40 years. Chances are good that it will spiral into civil war again, no matter what we do. We won't try to make Afghanistan a perfect place, Obama said, apparently with no irony in his voice. Yet, the withdrawal he spoke of is proceeding at an excruciatingly slow and costly pace. For more than a year, we'll continue to dump $10 billion a month into that war, money desperately needed for nation building in America. Even with Obama's announced reduction in our forces, 67,000 U.S. troops will still be in Afghanistan at the end of next year. And despite his pledge of a total military drawdown by 2015, it will cost taxpayers about $8 billion a year after that to meet his commitment to recruit, train, and fund a 300,000-member Afghan army and police force. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is a classic case of throwing good money after bad. Far worse, for at least three more years, we'll be throwing more American lives into a war that the president has declared to be over. America has achieved its goals there, he told us. Fine, so let's leave. Now,
what do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Texas is a right to work state. Texas is a great state. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
They're selling make believe and we don't buy that here. Shutting Detroit down.
Well, maybe not Detroit, but the entire police force in the city of Alto, Texas. That's right, the city council, they voted completely gut the department's budget. No more police department in the town of Alto, Texas. And you know, you stop and you think about it, our governor here in Pennsylvania, we want to be like Texas. So why not? We'll just start getting rid of the cops. You know, let's do that. Problem with that is that's a tough choice. That's a tough choice for a governor to make because people would go, wait a minute, no police around? That's not a good idea. But the folks in Alto, Texas, the councilman there, Jerry Flowers, he told Forbes magazine, we had to do something drastic. The police department, and you're going to love this, because it's exactly what I've been talking about for the longest time. Councilman Flowers said the police department, being a non-making entity, was the easiest to get rid of while we catch our breath and build up some cash. Evidently, the city is facing about $185,000 budget debt because of, you know, property tax decline and sales tax revenues being down. So, you know, going to have to, you know, suck it up, take the cuts, make matters worse. The city has not even saved up enough money to repair their natural gas distribution plant. Because you can't borrow money. No, got to have a balanced budget. Can't borrow money to fix that natural gas distribution plant to bring in tax revenue. That'd be a bad thing. Conservative world, balanced budgets. The police chief, Charles Barron, he's quoted as saying, there have been accusations that the police department is not generating enough revenue. And here he gets the duh moment. Well, he said, police departments are not revenue generators. They're police departments, you dimwits. So here's the thing, you know, this town of now 1,300 people, they're going to have to wait for the Cherokee County Sheriff's Department to send out some folk. Going to take, on average, about 15 minutes. So you call the police, there's somebody breaking into my house. Okay, well, we'll be there in about 15 minutes. We'll be there to mop up the corpse. Now, when Alto, Texas had a police department, they had an average response time of under 3 minutes. So, you know, I stop and I think about this. There's somebody breaking in my house. Come quick. Okay, we'll be there in time to, you know, make the little chalk outline. Or someone saying, you know, we're around the corner. We'll be there in a minute or two. I'm kind of leaning toward the, hey, we'll be there in a minute or two. And what they're saying is, you know, the reality is that the criminals have taken notice of this and are targeting the city. They've had some bank robbery attempts. They've had some, they've had a bunch of stuff. And, you know, the sheriff's saying, look, when you're sitting there needing help, it's a life, you know, 15 minutes is a lifetime. And he's right. But this is what conservative world looks like. And the next step beyond this is the city of Alto, Texas goes, okay, we'll bring back them there police mans. But you're going to have to pay a subscription. And if you don't subscribe, well, we're just not coming to your house. We'll stand out on the sidewalk and watch you raped and beaten. They did that to the people whose houses were on fire. What makes you think they would do any less with the police department? But that's conservative world. And I guess the question is that where we want to go? And you look at this budget that the Republicans just rammed through, and they had major, every story I've read, major victory for the Republicans. How's it a major victory? They did exactly what I said they were going to do back in January. And look, I'm not a genius. Everybody knew this is what they were going to do. They went after the people that didn't vote for them in the first place, are never going to vote for them, and now will never, never vote for them. And they were the easy constituents to beat up on. It's always easy to kick somebody when they're down. It's a lot harder to beat up somebody when they're standing on their 2 feet and have 2 arms to swing back. So you had these poor, these elderly, these disabled, and these children. You know, they're right down there at kicking range anyway. So that's what they went after. Easy. I'm going, where are the tough choices? I was told this is a budget of tough choices. Show me one tough choice. We gave out hundreds of millions of dollars to corporations. I guess that was a tough choice. Maybe? No, wait a minute. Those are the people who funded their campaigns and put them in the office. Now I'm getting it. And you stop and you look at just the insanity of these cuts. And we knew they were coming. We've been talking about them for months. They cut the welfare to work program by nearly 48%. So people who were taking GED classes, sorry, no more of that. No more helping you get off the rolls. We're just going to make sure you're permanently on the roll so we can villainize you. We can keep going after you and attacking you. While, of course, cutting your benefits so that you end up committing some petty crime and we can put you in our for-profit prison and profit from that. Conservative world, remember? This is corporatism gone to the next step. And this administration, this whole idea, and I'm still kind of freaked out by this, giving the governor's office control over the welfare funding. That worries me. That's the legislature's job. The power of the purse is, you know, on the federal level, you think of Congress, they have the purse. I think the same should apply to the state. And it should be something open for debate. It should be something that's discussed openly in public, you know, with hearings and all that stuff. As much as we complain that those folks over there argue, I want them arguing. And, you know, you look at the governor's office. They claim that, you know, this budget, it strikes a balance between two important goals, preserving the public assistance safety net for those who need it while not placing additional burdens on Pennsylvania taxpayers. I'm sorry. What did you preserve? You've cut almost half of the welfare to work program. How did that help anybody? You know, and this one woman, Roxanne Green, she was quoted in she was the program manager of Pathways PA, their EARN center in Philadelphia. One of these people who was, you know, organizing these GED classes. And she said, you know, it's hard to warn people about a tsunami coming when they don't know what a tsunami is. And I thought that was an interesting way of framing it. You know, you look at these folks who are now going to get hit. They're going to lose their benefits. They're going to end up not getting assistance that they needed. You're going to have larger class sizes, and most people are not going to know why. The disabled are not going to get the help that they've been getting, and they're not really probably going to know why. And, you know, it's one of these things that you go, was that a smart thing to do? And along with that, they cut $44 million from the welfare cash budget. You know, that's the food money. That's the money that goes into those stamps that helps you buy food. So we've cut $44 million from that. how is that going to help our grocery stores? How is that going to help our families? Where's the family value in that? They also cut over $17 million in child care subsidies. So while we're saying, you know, if you get off welfare, go get a job, we're saying, well, you're going to have to do it while paying for daycare. And, of course, you're making minimum wage, which is, what, about $290 bucks a week? And you're going to pay $150 of that away in child care? Kind of sends mixed messages. And the other thing that it gets me is they cut $500,000 from the state's food purchase program because the state buys bulk amounts of food to distribute to the food banks. So basically, no longer, they're going to be about 53 trailer loads of food no longer going to the food pantries. And when I was coming over here today, in my neighborhood, the food bank, the folks were lining up, and the line was around the corner of people who needed help. And now you're talking about cutting that away. And, you know, time after time, you look at where are the tough choices? Where were the tough choices for Republicans? I'm not seeing it. You know, if there's someone out there, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, I'm curious because I am just not seeing any tough choices. What I'm seeing is the low line, the easy to attack. Go after the women and children. And, you know, I would expect nothing less from a conservative. Nothing less. And you look at what they did, and that's all this is. This is going after the women and children. And, you know, you look at some of the numbers. And, you know, I sat down and I thought about this when I saw the number. Welfare payments, the cash money that goes out in welfare for a single woman and one child, they will get a welfare payment of $158.50 every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks. Stop and think about, can you feed your child on $158 every 2 weeks? You're talking about what, 75, 79 and a quarter a week? 79 and a quarter a week. Can you feed, that's what, a little over $10 a day, the two of you? Good luck on that. And again, you know, it's the easy ones. It's the easy people to go after. And that's what they did. And they destroyed the programs that are going to help people get from welfare to work. The ones that teach skill sets. And, you know, most of my friends who have grown up solely in the middle class, they understand middle class skill sets. They do, and they take them for granted. You know, it's just who I am. I mean, I understand this. But for me, you know, I grew up in a housing project. I understand the skill sets that you need to exist in that environment. And fortunately, I've been able to adapt and learn a middle class skill set. It wasn't easy. But you have to learn those. And, you know, if I ever make $1 million, I'm going to have to learn another skill set. Because in order to be, you know, in the upper crust, you need to be able to know what their values are and what their mores are and know how to get around and navigate their structure. Same's true for people in poverty. They need to learn the skill sets that are going to help them pull out of poverty. And we've taken that avenue away. We have basically pulled the rug out from under them. And this budget, they keep saying, oh, it's a great accomplishment for the Republicans. You know, they took us back all the way back to 2008. But what they forgot to tell you is that, you know, we pretty well capped off spending 2 years ago under Rendell. But they don't talk about that. And when there was more money that came in, you know, because they underestimated how much revenue they were going to get by an obnoxious amount. They refused to use any of that. And again, it takes me back to what are our family values? They're supposedly the party of family values, right? They're supposed to be the ones saying, oh, you know, we're gonna make sure that, you know, we take care of the family first. I got a press release from Kathy Rapp, a Republican from Warren, Foster, and McKean area. She writes that this is the first time since taking office in 2005 that she has voted in favor of a final state budget. This is the first one since she's been in office that she's voted for. That's a big Republican talking point. Hey, I believe in this. It's good. She said, after rejecting six consecutive unsustainable Rendell state budgets, I am pleased to support the 2011-12 state budget because it succeeds in not increasing the tax burden on Pennsylvania working citizens and job creators while restoring $100 million for accountability block grants that are extremely important to rural school districts. I represent to spend as they see fit on pre-K, all-day daycare, and after-school tutoring programs. She goes on to say, it also benefits our Higher Education Council by increasing funding to the state system of higher education, state-related universities and community colleges, to $1.6 billion. Not that they slashed that down a bunch. Doesn't mention that, does she? No. She says it contains no tax increases, no new borrowing. And then she applauds herself for the $1.17 billion in spending reductions, she says. Those are slashes. Those are cuts. Those are cuts that are going to harm people. She's proud of that. The $404 million in House Republican proposed reductions to the governor's originally proposed Department of Welfare, so she's screwing people on welfare a whole bunch more, and happy about that. She wants to the restoration of the capital stock and franchise tax phase out to provide Pennsylvania's job creators with $70 million in needed tax relief. So she's happy about slashing programs that help poor people and equally happy about giving money to rich people. Very nice. She goes on to be very happy about the eliminating what she calls 100 wasteful, non-essential, and duplicated line items and government programs. Got rid of all those. Very happy about this stuff. And this is what she voted for. So what I'm saying, before we take a break, is what you need to understand. When you start to feel these effects, and like the woman says, how can you tell somebody about a tsunami and warn them when a tsunami is coming when they don't know what it is? I'm telling you, when the pain starts, when you get that pain in your side, you're going, my wallet's hurting me. It's empty. You know why. When your kid is sitting in a class with 40 people or 50 people, you now know why. When your property taxes go up, you now know why. When you get less services from the local government, libraries closed early, you now know why. If you have a child with a disability and that program's no longer there to help, you know why. And when granny needs a helping hand and it's not there, or it's tied up in long lists, long waiting lines, you now know why. We're going to take a quick break, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, back after this.
Millions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Corporations give billions of welfare. Millions in this country don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in this country and not a dime to spare.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Well, you know, the former president, Bill Clinton, had some advice. Now, remember, Clinton's the only Democrat to win re-election since FDR. You know, holding a no-holds-bar advice for Obama, he said, you know what? Don't blink. And, you know, there's part of me that goes, it's inevitable. It's just inevitable. You know, Democrats cave. And Clinton said, you know, what Obama's facing right now is the political equivalent of what went on in 95, 96, when Gingrich and the other, that band of hostage takers forced the government to shut down. If you remember that, Clinton said the Republican idea of compromise is essentially hollow. And I think that's important advice for this president to understand. It's one of those, the Republicans are like the smart aleck who, I had my fingers crossed, you know, one of those kind of guys, you know, the kind you just want to smack. But that's the idea. And like Clinton said, the Republican idea of a compromise is we're going to get 85% of what we ask for, and you're not going to get anything that you've asked for. And he said, you know, the average person, that's not much of a compromise. But the Republicans, that is. Well, we gave up 15% of what we wanted. You should be happy. We could have wanted it all. Which, you know, 85%, I would love to have that deal. So when you read stories about John Boehner, Speaker of the House, saying that, well, you know, if there are debt talks on the, you know, if during the debt talks you start talking about taxes, that's it. The meeting, it's fruitless. Taxes can't even be on the menu. Nothing. You see what Clinton's talking about. And, you know, one of the very few things I liked about Clinton was at times he was willing to take a stand. At times. He stood his ground, especially during the 95-96, you know, hostage situation there. And you look at Paul Ryan, who said, you know, we won't cut any tax loopholes to reduce the deficit. Not doing it. We are not doing it. And you go to yourself, well, how is that compromise? How is it before you even walk into a room saying, I'm not going to do it? You know, the country be damned. And you look at this debt ceiling. And look, any rational person is going to go, okay, we got a problem. I'm not even one who says we can do it all with tax increases. I think we need substantial tax increases. I think we need the upper crust to be required to, you know, help out a little bit. I should share a little bit, share the sacrifice, you think? Maybe a little, Jake? Maybe a little shared sacrifice? I mean, if I've got to eat the store brand macaroni and cheese, shouldn't they have to eat the store brand caviar?
Well, a simple counter to the Republicans when they say they're not going to vote for any tax increases, you got to say, look, we're not asking you to agree to move the tax brackets up. We're just asking you to stop some tax breaks.
And when did tax,
you can't
when
justify
did, when did tax breaks, when did cutting off, when did turning off the spigot, when did saying no more handouts, when did that become a tax increase? That's completely flipped me.
Well,
how does turning off the spigot, well, you see, you've increased your intake because we've turned it off.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. The average person out there doesn't live and breathe in politics. And if you want to win the argument, you need to take the time and explain it to the public. And I think that's a good point. I heard the former governor Rendell say that tonight. And it is a very good point. You just tell the American people, look, we simply want to close the loopholes that don't deserve to be there anymore. It's that simple.
And, you know, the ones that they're going after, I go back to the tax reform bill of 86, where they talked about closing some loopholes. And which ones got slammed closed permanently? Which things got slammed closed and were never talked about again? Well, obviously things that benefited you and me. The ability to deduct credit card interest, the ability to deduct loan interest off your taxes, the fact that they started taxing unemployment benefits, You get on the list, all the things that benefited us and the working class, they took away permanently. All those things that benefited the wealthy and corporations, they took away temporarily, gave them a nice bump down, a nice drop in top tax rate from 50 down to 28%, a nice little pocket change, and then gave them the opportunity to go back, spend a bunch more money on campaigns, and to get all those loopholes back again. You and I, we didn't get the loopholes back. We didn't get our piece of it. And now what they're talking about, let's do away with mortgage deduction. You know, things would be a lot better. We lowered the rate and did away with mortgage deduction. There would be a lot more people paying taxes. Are you high? You're going to take away the one incentive that, and I don't even know there's really an incentive that much for working people to buy houses. It's twisted. But that's their mentality. And you look at this trade deal that they're trying to ram down our throats. You look at, again, going back to this idea that the Republicans' idea of compromise is 85% of what we want, nothing for you. Both sides are trying to ram these trade agreements down our throats, but it's the Republicans who want their way the most. And they're saying under no circumstances will we move a bill that has any inclusion of the trade adjustment assistance. The TAA, nothing. Don't care. It's not happening. It's not going to pass. And I say fine. There's part of me that hopes Obama is such a shrewd poker player that he's put this in the calculus. Because, you know, he sat there and he said to us, and I don't know if you were there or not, but I was. I was, you know, inches, you know, a couple feet away from the guy. You know, when he said this.
You can trust me when I say that whenever trade deals we negotiate come to my desk, they are going to be good for American workers, that they'll have powerful labor and environmental protections, and that we will enforce those protections.
You know, I was, you know, feet away from the guy when he said that, so I want to believe him. So there's part of me that's hoping that he's such a shrewd poker player that he knows this in the back of his head, said, look, I can't pass these agreements. The labor standards aren't there, but I got to look like I'm trying. Got to move to the middle a little bit, you know, impress those, you know, big Wall Street people. Got to make some money. I kind of get that. But I'm hoping he's such a shrewd poker player that he's going, you know what? I got to put this TAA in there because I know the Republicans are going to block me on it. And I'm hoping that's it. But I don't think so. I'm hoping that's his, you know, his poker face, and he's playing this hand out. But at the end of the day, the Republicans are on, at every step of the way. You look at the budget here in Pennsylvania, you look at the debt ceiling that they're talking about, and the budget that they want to pass in Congress, and you look at the fact that they don't want to put the TAA in these trade agreements. Again, who are they working for? It's surely not you and me. It's not working people. It's the investor class. It's the folks who've done very, very well at filling their pockets. And, you know, the reality is the folks who are filling their pockets are the ones who have been benefiting the most since the Great Recession. And with every crisis, they're the ones who benefit the most. So when they cause another crisis because of the latest hostage situation, when they crash the economy because of not increasing the debt ceiling, who's going to benefit? The very top, as they always do. When we come back, I want to talk about this New York Times article about the obscene amount of money these CEOs are getting. Back after this, 1-888-520-RICK.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. This winter sports season could be the National Hockey League's opportunity to have the spotlight all to itself. With the National Basketball Association's players locked out and the National Football League staring down a potential short season, sports fans won't have many other options. If the NBA lockout continues into the regular season, it could benefit China. Kobe Bryant and a number of other players are considering taking the show overseas for an exhibition tour. Meanwhile, The NFL has fewer than 3 weeks to reach a settlement before rookies are scheduled to head to training camp. If a settlement can't be reached and get rookies set to train, that will very likely have football fans looking at, if they're lucky, half a season of pro football. The two sides of the football battle have been working all weekend to get a potential new settlement agreement on the table, but formal meetings won't start until today. The answer to solving state deficits could be flipping the current tax structure. Doug Cunningham reports.
Flip it to fix it. A United for a Fair Economy study shows that states could wipe out budget deficits and pay for public services into the future by just flipping the regressive tax structures to more progressive ones. United for a Fair Economy's Karen Kraut.
It doesn't have to be this way. States could really produce a large amount of revenue. They could have an economically sound and sustainable tax system if they flipped their structures, asking that the wealthiest families pay as a share of their income what the lowest income families are currently paying as a share of their income in state and local taxes, and vice versa.
If state tax systems were inverted like that, Kraut says 60% of state income taxpayers would pay the same or even lower state income taxes while preserving public education and other services.
Everyone in the lowest income quintile and the second quintile would see a reduction in the amount of their income that they're paying in state and local taxes. On the flip side, the wealthiest families who are currently not carrying their weight in terms of the share of income they're paying in state and local taxes, they would be asked to pay proportionally more. The idea of constantly giving wealthy people and corporations tax breaks is going to lift all boats has never proven to be true.
The full report on flipping state tax structures to wipe out deficits is at faireconomy.org. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
Taxes, the poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Well, that's all I heard over the weekend. Boy, I mean, you would have thought that, you know, that God was right there on the battlefield, right there pushing the founding fathers. All the talk that I heard this weekend, just kind of, you know, and not just that, not that average everyday God, their super Christian God, not the Catholic one, the super one, you know, the one that, you know, with all the jumping and all that stuff. Sometimes it scares me. I mean, it really, I've always said that I can't wait until we decide that we're a Christian nation and we make it law. I'm hoping that someone will pass a law saying, sorry, no more other religions, just Christian stuff. And then the real good fighting begins between the different sects. Personally, I'm putting my money on the Catholics. But, you know, the Baptists are pretty well armed. So, I mean, it'd be an interesting fight. But, you know, we'll see. I get to watch it all on TV. That'd be the good part. Although I don't have an arsenal. You know, I've got my little stash, but not a whole arsenal. I've got friends who have an entire arsenal full of stuff. Scary stuff. But here's the thing. Here's how we save the country. Save the country by looking at the CEO class. There are three people who saw increases in their pocket change of more than $13 billion. Those three people, Warren Buffett, the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, Larry Ellison, the head guy over at Oracle, and Jeffrey Bezos. He's the Amazon guy. The three of them saw their compensation increase by $13 billion with their stock and options in 2010. Now, stop and think about this for a second. They saw an increase of $13 billion. The three of them combined paid $1.95 billion in taxes. Just about $2 billion. Thanks to our capital gains taxes, because they didn't actually work for that. They stock stuff. 15% capital gains. Let's say you won the Mega Million lottery. let's say you were lucky enough, well, I'd say dumb enough to buy a lottery ticket, but you were lucky enough to be the big winner, and you won $13 billion. You were the guy. You'd pay $3.25 billion, a 25% tax. And let's say you were a really good carpenter, and you worked for a living, you earned your paycheck by the sweat of your brow and the ache of your back and the skill of your hands. And you were just a great carpenter. You made that $13 billion hammering nails and cutting 2x4s and doing all that. You'd have paid about $4.5 billion in taxes. I wish someone would explain to me why gambling on Wall Street is more lucrative than gambling in the lottery, and why gambling is taxed lower than working. Now, I understand why gambling on Wall Street is higher priority than gambling on the lottery. Because the lottery goes to people like you and me. Most dumb schlubs, they put their buck down. Hey, you know, it gives me a fantasy for a day. You know, I have a friend who buys a lottery ticket every day, and he tells me that's how he gets through the day. Because he's able to then imagine. He takes a daily vacation. Every day he takes a vacation from the reality that his life sucks, and the job that he's been working for 20 years is even worse than that. But for that couple of hours between the time he buys the ticket and the time he found out that he lost, he thinks about how he would spend his Mega Millions. I understand why the two of those are different. You know, because the CEO class has lobbyists. The Mega Millions winner, he doesn't have any money yet. He just has fantasies. So when he does win, hey, yeah, I got something. And they take a quarter of it. Now, the people who work for a living, I don't understand why they allow both of those other scenarios to exist. Especially handing out all the money that we're giving to the investor class, who then sits on their yachts and sips margaritas or you know, races cars or do whatever they do for fun, and pays a half, less than half of what we pay. Figure that out. Explain it to me. And I look at the New York Times piece titled "We Knew They Got Raises, But This," and as they said, it turns out that the good times are even better than we thought. For the American chief executives. Back in April, you remember the New York Times, they did a preliminary examination of the CEO pay scale from 2010. And what they found was that the paychecks at the top, you know, those very wealthy people up there in the suites, the CEO suites looking down on the rest of us, they were back to growing. You know, the recession had hit. They had that little bump in the road, September 2008. But now things were back on track, you know. Profits were rolling in. Bonuses were doing well. Hey, champagne in the suites. But the reality is those early numbers from April, they didn't do justice to the executive suite at all. If the CEOs don't thank you, and let me from the bottom of my heart, if the big CEOs don't thank you for your hard work, let me do it. Thank you from the bottom of their glass of Chateau Lafite, 1787, sold at about $160,000 a bottle. They thank you from the bottom of that glass. Here are the final figures. Median pay for the top executives at the 200 biggest companies in this country. The median pay was $10.8 million. That means those fortunate 200, they saw a pay increase of 23% over 2009. What did you get? Now, you remember the earlier study said they were making about 9.6, which is not too bad. You can get extra cheese on your hamburger with that. But that was just up 12%. Now they saw that 23% jump. Hey, we can not only get a little extra cheese, we can get the supersized fry, too. Think about that. And the reality is American corporations, they did very well as well. I mean, we've seen, and we've been talking about for months, you know, the profit numbers that keep rolling in, these big companies, the big profits, and the money that they're sitting on, not hiring people, not reinvesting so much here. There's some going on, but not as much as you would expect with all the money they're sitting on. So profits up, CEO pay up. How are you doing? I look at Philip Dahmen. He's the head guy over at Viacom. $84.5 million last year. Look at Les Moonves. CBS, he got a 32% raise up to $56.9 million. Michael White, the head of DirecTV, almost $33 million. Obama's new friend, Brian Roberts of Comcast, $28 million. Robert Iger, the head guy over at Walt Disney, $28 million. Are you seeing anything there? Do you see, you know, my kid was talking about patterns. You see any patterns there? You see anything in common? Lots of money. Media conglomerates. All of them. The messengers. The people who are putting out the word. I mean, I'm amazed that this story even got out, to be honest with you. Some of the other CEOs that they pointed out, the guy who heads Target, $23.5 million. The guy who heads Altria, $20.7 million. The guy who heads Freeport, this gold, copper and gold, $35.3 million. I mean, just obscene amounts of money. And you look at this report that was released by Governance Metrics back in June, and they say, look, you know, the good times are just getting better for the CEO class. So here's the thing. CEOs are seeing a very nice chunk of change. Filling the pockets, filling their coffers. So how are you doing? How are things going for Joe working class? Well, according to the New York Times, the average worker, that means people like you and me, we're taking home $752 a week in late 2010. That is an increase, and you got to be happy that it was an increase, of 0.5%, less than 1%, half a percent. So when you throw inflation on top of that, again, you know, talking about wage stagnation, you throw that inflation in there, we're actually making less money in 2010 than you were in 2009. Now, you know, the chief executives, they're doing all right. And here's the best part of all. You hear people talking about, well, you know, the CEO's money's all in stock. Yeah, that's the best part. I'm wondering how I can get, you know, if the next job I take or whatever, I'm hoping that they'll pay me in stock. You go, well, why is that? So I only pay 15% tax. A guy who's swinging a hammer, if you're making a decent living, you're swinging a hammer, you're paying 35% tax. You mean I can do the same job, just call it something different, and pay 15% tax? Stop and think about it. So when Buffett saw his stock holdings jump by 16% to $46 billion, that was only taxed at 15%. And you know, you stop and you think about, what did we learn from the collapse? Was there any lesson that was learned? Did anybody think this through? And, you know, there were all these different boards saying, well, we promise we're going to tie it to executive, success. It's going to be a meritocracy. Well, I'm sorry. Last time I checked, 23% stock, 23% income in the CEO's pocket, when shareholders saw a 16% gain was not a meritocracy. In fact, only 7% of that, went to shareholders. So where's the balance? Where's the merit? And what bothers me is you've got people like Santorum. You've got people like Pat Buchanan who are fighting to keep every one of these tax handouts for CEOs who are buying planes. Because according to Pat Buchanan, well, if we don't give them all this money, if we don't hand out this money to them, they're going to stop buying planes. No, they're still going to need to jump around. Oh, well, they'll just go out of the country and get them. That's why you have tariffs. And again, it's this bizarre series of thoughts that just drives me insane. We do not hold corporations accountable. We hand them all this money. We say, here, create some jobs. And they don't. And even when they do, sometimes I look at this story from the Business Insider. The Army is saying that the $2.7 billion cloud-based computer system that they bought to supposedly help the troops in Afghanistan and Iraq, turns out it doesn't work. And it's probably doing more harm than good. And I love what the responses were. One of the intelligence officers said almost any commercial solution out there would have been better. It doesn't work. It's not providing the capabilities that they need. You know, you look at the reality, and this is, we just handed Northrop Grumman $2.7 billion for a big piece of garbage. They got their money, and you and I paid the bill. It's amazing stuff, man. And we put up with it. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We come back. Today is the anniversary of the signing of the National Labor Relations Act. Got to talk about that right back after this.
listening to The Rick Smith Show.
At long last, America's overdue withdrawal from Afghanistan has begun. The tide of war is receding, declared President Obama as he announced that 10,000 troops would come home this year and 20,000 more next year. That tide has been a deadly one for our country. 1,562 of our troops killed, more than 11,000 maimed, many horribly, their lives shattered, and almost half a trillion of our tax dollars siphoned from crucial needs here at home. And what did we buy with this precious outlay? An Afghan government that is flagrantly corrupt and embarrassingly inept. A nation that remains impoverished, largely illiterate, anarchic, split into factious ethnic groupings, and roiled by an unresolved civil war that's been simmering and occasionally boiling over for nearly 40 years. Chances are good that it will spiral into civil war again, no matter what we do. We won't try to make Afghanistan a perfect place, Obama said, apparently with no irony in his voice. Yet, the withdrawal he spoke of is proceeding at an excruciatingly slow and costly pace. For more than a year, we'll continue to dump $10 billion a month into that war, money desperately needed for nation building in America. Even with Obama's announced reduction in our forces, 67,000 U.S. troops will still be in Afghanistan at the end of next year. And despite his pledge of a total military drawdown by 2015, it will cost taxpayers about $8 billion a year after that to meet his commitment to recruit, train, and fund a 300,000-member Afghan army and police force. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is a classic case of throwing good money after bad. Far worse, for at least three more years, we'll be throwing more American lives into a war that the president has declared to be over. America has achieved its goals there, he told us. Fine, so let's leave. Now,
what do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Standing tall against the multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
Nice had they passed the Employee Free Choice Act. I think some of that CEO salary, I think some of that would have gone down. And, you know, that's one of the things that I think is important to understand. You know, when people have the ability to bargain, when people have the ability to go, oh, wait a minute, you're taking how much? $50 million in salaries and you don't want to give us a dime? I got a problem with that. And that's what collective bargaining allows you to do. And, you know, for years it held down the CEO salary. And when the CEO said, you know what, I want to raise, he spread the wealth a little bit, shared the take. So when those profits came rolling in, the more productive you were, more money you made. Which is why up until the Reagan years, as productivity went up, workers' wages went up. Meritocracy, the thing the right loves to talk about. Meritocracy. You look at most of those companies where these top 200 companies where these CEOs are making all this money. They're not profiting 23-30%. They're not seeing that kind of gain, but their CEOs are. And what we're seeing on the right, and this is scary stuff, because I don't know that I have seen a good response. And today is the day that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the National Labor Relations Act into law, which gave workers the right to organize and the right to bargain collectively. What's under attack right now, and here in the state of Pennsylvania, understand it's coming. Those anti-worker, no rights at work agenda bills will come up in the fall. Mark my word. And all that means is an attack on all workers, not just unionized workers, all workers. You know, again, you go back to the whole Pastor Niemöller thought. You know, first they came for the communists, and I said nothing because I wasn't a communist. And they came for the trade unionists, and I said nothing because I wasn't a trade unionist. Eventually, man, all of us in the working class, we are all in the Shark Tank. We're all on their menu. It's just a matter of time. And I look at the NLRA, which, you know, again, took some rights away from workers. You know, the right to, you know, to sit down and say no more. You know, we bargained away a lot of rights. But what it did do is it said you have the right to strike. You have the right to not be retaliated for striking. And I look at what's going on with the Boeing situation. And the right wing in this country has really seized this as much a freedom issue. And it's not. And when they say that, well, it's tyranny, it's freedom. And I ask, well, first, who's the person being tyrannical? And secondly, whose freedom are we talking about? Our mainstream media hasn't talked about that. For me, it's a matter of right and wrong. But the right has framed this as, you know, Boeing is losing its freedom. And what about the workers? What about their freedom? And again, you know, it comes back to which side of this are you on? Are you on the side of the working class, the 62% of the people in this country who are clearly defined as working class? Or are you on the 2 or 3% of the CEO class, the people who make these decisions? I mean, that's really the question, and that's what it boils down to for me. It's not a freedom issue as the right tries to define it, because they know if they talk about it on the merits of the case, they lose. So they have to change the debate, and they have very successfully. Every right-wing talk show, every television program, the government came in and said that, you know, the Boeing, you know, can't move because they broke the law. Are we not a country of law? Do we not enforce laws? You know, if I did something, they'd come down on me. But since this is Boeing with huge, huge amounts of money that they can spend on lobbyists, well, they changed the discussion. And I'm telling you, what we need in this country, massive labor law reform. We need to redefine what a worker is. Because big business has figured out all the ways around the current laws. And I look at this story from the LA Times. There was a plant, there's a BMW plant in Ontario, California. And they're one of the BMW supply chain. They are the cream of the crop. They're the gold standard for the industry, for the company. In the 40 years that they've been represented by the Teamsters Union, there has never been a work stoppage. There's never been a problem. They've always worked together. It's one of these companies. It was one of these places where people judged their time at the company by how many baseball games they missed, how many birthday parties they missed, because that was their career, that was their life. They sacrificed for the company to make sure that the company was successful. So evidently their contract ends on on August 31st. Contract's done. They need a new one starting September 1st. Instead of saying, you know what, we're going to renegotiate, we're going to negotiate a good contract, we're going to work through it, they said, sorry, we're firing everybody. We're going to outsource all of our work to a third-party logistics company. So all but three of the 71 people who are currently working at this plant, at this distribution center, done, gone, bye. There's the door. And this really is the evisceration of the middle class. This job pays about $25 an hour with health benefits. This is a very good-paying job, a family-sustaining job. Company says, you know what? We don't want to do it anymore. We're going to outsource it to this third-party logistics company, and they're probably going to pay about half of that. And none of the folks that work here now who have been here 25, 30 years, you're all gone. And the reality is that every person in this country should be worried, should be dismayed, should be angry of what BMW is in the process of doing. Because so many companies have already done it, you're going to see a wave of this. Where they say, you know what? We no longer want to be in the business of having workers. We just want to be in the business of making profit. We don't care about the communities that we operate in. We don't care about the workforce that makes us our profit. We just want the profit. And, you know, the reality is this job here in Ontario, California, with the BMW plant, and I understand the folks in Germany, This could never happen there. Never. Only in America could this kind of thing happen. Understand, this was a job that, you know, you could invest in your retirement. You could send your kids to college. You could buy a house. You could do many things. And now they're all fired. Why? Because the company wants more money. And what's going to happen to these workers? And the story goes through a couple of the folks who are, you know, they know they're screwed. They're going to probably lose their house because their life was based on making a living at this company that they gave their lives to. And there was never an indication that that company wouldn't be there for another 40 years because the company kept telling them, we're here for the long haul. We're investing. You invest in us and we'll invest in you. It's a partnership. The benevolent corporation. We're wonderful together. We're a great team. How many times have you heard the team thing at work? Well, it turns out most of them are probably going to lose their homes. They're going to lose their cars. They're going to lose out. And the deeper you get into this scenario, you look at BMW, who had a, much like GMAC, had a financing arm that got itself into a little trouble. And they took about $3.6 billion from the Fed after the great collapse of 2008. That was perfectly okay. It's great. But now, we as a society can't tell BMW that they can't outsource these jobs. So what happens? The workers go and they say, you know, go to their elected officials. You know, Barbara Boxer and a couple of the Congress people who, they write a letter. Oh, they wrote a letter. And as the article points out, a painfully polite letter to the CEO. You know, but please, would you not fire? Would you not fire these workers? Because we really would appreciate it if you didn't. And I'm sure he gave it all of the consideration that it deserved right into the circular file. But think about it. $3.6 billion we gave them. Now they're going to fire 70 workers. And immediately I think of our economic development policies. We give them a bunch of money to hopefully create jobs, and they don't create any jobs. And if they do, their crummy minimum wage jobs to begin with. So should we not be asking for our $3.6 billion back, which is what these representatives, I think, should be doing? There's no clawback on this. And, you know, I love this frame. Well, it's nothing personal. It's the tyranny of the marketplace. We live in a free market economy. Things like this happen. And I go back to Germany. You know, in Germany, could never happen. Because the workers in the industries across the spectrum would be outraged. You look in the UK right now. You know, the other day, 750,000 people out in the streets fighting for things that we've negotiated away over the years when times were good. And I look at this and I go, you know, my grandfather's generation got it. My grandfather was, you know, didn't graduate from the eighth grade, but he got it. His generation knew. The CEO is not your buddy. The investor class, they're not your buddy. These people want to profit off of your backside. And as the old man always said, you know, anytime a rich guy takes a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. Because he knew. He was a street smart guy. And we've lost that street smart. We may be smarter book-wise, but maybe we're just not getting the total evisceration of the middle class in this country, all in the name of doing away with redundancy and synergy and, well, we need to return to more profitability. And, you know, when they closed that department store Clover years ago, well, you know, it wasn't making an acceptable profit. You know, back in the 50s and 60s, what now is not considered an acceptable profit was great times. How things have changed. Now look at this new report out from Boston, from the folks over at Boston University, their Public Policy Institute. More than half of adults aged 50 plus who had worked for pay during the 3 years prior to October 2010 rated their family's financial well-being as only fair or even poor in October and 10. More than 2 in 5, 45%, assess their family's financial well-being as at least good, and only a few, 5%, said it was excellent, according to a survey by AARP. You know, as we're moving down the road, and this is why they're going after Social Security. This is why they're going after Medicare. We're not prepared. Because the jobs of the last 30 years, wages have been stagnant. We've been living on credit cards. We've been living on borrowed time, all because we believe in the benevolent corporation. Sad, sad. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this. We're going to talk about what to expect after the summer recess. Back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make
the phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm telling you, when the summer recess ends here in Harrisburg, the hammer will indeed fall. You know, you think this budget was bad. You think the joint and several bill that they passed, that Fair Share Act, was bad. You think the unemployment comp bill that they rammed through was bad. Just wait. The Republicans in this state wanted to get much worse and much more painful for you and everybody else. And, you know, good for the corporations. You know, look, at the end of the day, I still go back to what my government teacher in high school said. No matter what you say, Republicans are always going to be for big business and the wealthy. Democrats are going to be for, you know, big government and the poor. It's that simple. You have to decide, being folks in the middle, which way you're leaning. Are you more inclined to be a rich guy or a poor guy? Kind of makes that decision a little easier for you. If you're closer to poverty, you're going to say, well, you know, I want to have a safety net underneath me. You got $1 million, you know, nest egg sitting there. You're more apt to say, you know what, screw you. I don't care about you and your safety net. I got my $1 million pillow there. You know, if you've got that kind of money, then, you know, again, it all depends on which side you're on. And I understand both sides. I understand someone who's sitting on a pile of cash going, you know what, I want privatized everything. I can afford what I need. I need to have police protection. I can pay for that. I need fire protection. I can pay for that. I understand that mentality. For the vast majority of us, though, we don't have that luxury. So we have to band together. We have to throw into the pot to make sure that we have the things that we need. Now, a discussion of how much do we need and what we need should be had. I do want police protection. I do want fire protection. Sorry. There's a couple of things I've gotten used to. When my house, you know, burnt down, you know, the police came, they put the fire out. And thank goodness that they did. Because the insurance company would have never believed how much I had in that house. So they saved me a whole world of grief. Because, you know, while the things were burnt, they were still there. And, you know, I've gotten used to it. I've gotten used to public education. Worked pretty well for me. Doing pretty well for my kids. You know, I've gotten used to a bunch of stuff. But understand, when they come back, vouchers, front and center, and privatizing the liquor, the state wine and spirit shops, that's going to be, man, right on the front burners. That's, you know, that's the golden chalice. That's the, you know, the victory dance. You can get those two things passed, boy, Republicans will be, well, they'll be like Anthony Weiner, standing at attention and very happy. But it just doesn't end there. I mean, this Transportation Commission, their report is due August 1st. I can't wait to see what Corbett's people have come up for privatizing our roads and bridges. Can't wait. Because you know P3s, the public-private partnerships, which have been so popular since the 80s and work so well. Look at our crumbling infrastructure. I'm sure that's going to be front and center. And I've always said what we should do, if we're going to go this route, we should just go all private. But no toll roads. Sorry. I say that we should give corporations like a mile stretch. Or, you know, even just a seam. We'll sell each seam, and in the seam they can paint their advertising. It'll be good for two reasons. One, we could get the revenue we need. And two, we might get people's eyes back on the road instead of, you know, playing with their gadgets or themselves. So the thought, you know, maybe that's a good idea. Maybe we could go that way. I wonder if that'll be in Corbett's commission. But they want to reform business taxes. Again, pandering to big business. They want to go after the unemployment compensation system even more. And we need, of course, more legal reform. Much like the fair share or the joint and several, which took your rights to sue away. And I want to know I want to see the first guy who gets screwed by that system. But these are the attacks that are coming. The voucher thing, to me, just plain dumb. We're going to destroy all of public education for 144 schools. Because what I'm told is there are 144 quote unquote failing schools in Pennsylvania out of 3,200. So for that small number, we're going to destroy the whole system. It's not about those, understand, it's not about those 144 schools. It has nothing to do with that. It's about privatizing. It's about profitizing. It's about putting money into the hands of the Koch brothers and the DeVosses. Into the Bush hands. Privatizing the liquor stores, even dumber. We make good money off of that investment. That's ours. We're shareholders. In every one of those state stores. The other thing that's going to come up, the fees, the quote-unquote impact fees on the natural gas drillers. Sorry, I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling the real passion that I think we should be feeling for this valuable resource being sucked out from under our feet. And not only the resource, but the pollution and the troubles that it's going to cause. We're not benefiting from that. And I absolutely believe some of it has to come to the general coffers. But you know, Jake, you know, they're going to push this, and they're going to push this until they have privatized every function and they have profitized every function of our government.
Well, they've been adamantly opposed to putting it in the general fund. And their excuse is, well, if you put it in the general fund, it's like throwing it down a rat hole and it disappears. Well, you know, that's a lame excuse. You can use that excuse for anything you don't like. In the end, they just don't want, or they want, they would prefer no taxes at all. But at worst, what they want is minimal taxes.
My problem with it, with this whole idea of an impact fee, is it turns into patronage. when you start putting that, you know, well, you know, we'll make, it's that race to the bottom mentality. You're going to give each community the ability to compete against each other based on who can offer the most rebates and the most subsidies and the exemptions from the impact fees. It's really a race to the bottom. And really, that's the Republican, that's their poison pilling. Whenever they put something in, it's always the destroy it. It's always the poison pilling. This whole idea that, oh, we're gonna let the communities compete against each other. Bad idea. Because eventually you're going to have someone say, I don't care about the environment. My kids are starving. We need jobs. So we'll let those kids, you know, 10 or, what's 10 or 20 IQ points, you know, among friends?
Well, the problem is, Rick, when you're talking about water supply, it's interrelated. County to county is interrelated. Certainly community to community is interrelated. And once you get in a local water supply, you know, political subdivisions mean nothing. That's the problem with that. Not to mention the fact that if you allow the state government to do it, you have a little more power, you have a little more leverage. No, not a little, a lot more leverage. I would much prefer the state government, the state treasury to get that money.
You know, I look at Ohio. There's a story in the Pittsburgh Tribune Review today talking about the frack water. This water that's being taken, these, and they call it hazardous fluids, which is exactly what it is. They're talking about, since we've said, you know what, you really shouldn't be dumping that in our water supply. We don't want you really dumping it into the water. What they've been doing now, I guess, is they've been trucking it over to Ohio, and Ohio has been putting it into their deep wells. They've been injecting it underground. And again, you know, this part of me says, well, you need jobs, I guess. And Ohio is doing everything they can possibly do to get this work. And I'm going, how bad does it have to be when you become the state to say, come, pollute my underground. Yes, we want to be the mile underground pollution capital. In fact, you know, they've got several of these deep well injection sites where they take all of this toxic waste and they put it under our ground. Yeah, no problem. Don't worry about it. And what I find interesting is the guy who's supposed to be overseeing this, and evidently there are 174 permitted disposal wells, and there are four more that are pending in Ohio. So you have the capability of 178 of these wells. The guy who oversees it is from the Department of Natural Resources. Is that Orwellian or what? The Department of Natural Resources. Yes, we'll take your toxic sludge and we'll pump it underneath our natural resources. I mean, it just rings of, I mean, you would think the EPA would be in charge of that, but no, the Department of Natural Resources. It's just kind of, doesn't that grab you?
No, absolutely.
I mean, it's very Orwellian to me.
I mean, these companies must have deep pockets. I don't know if you picked that up in the article, but according to the article I read on it, Rick, they're actually, some of these companies are considering building a rail line from Pennsylvania to Ohio. We don't want to build it to help the economy. We don't want to build it because it's the right thing to do. We're going to build it to help a deep-pocketed natural gas industry.
Well, because at the end of it, putting one of these deep well injection sites in Pennsylvania is going to be more costly because of how deep they would have to go. Ohio has some sandstone that we can just pump it all in there. And as you know, I'm going, fine, take it to Ohio. Let it go.
Well, we also said, as the first of the year, the standards are were set a little bit more stringent by the EPA. The EPA standards for the amount of solid wastewater plants could allow in treated water. So they're being forced to find a solution, and the solution is to go to a neighboring state.
And again, it's this idea of
race to the bottom.
Exactly. And that's the point in all of this. Now understand, each well, and this is just amazing to me. Each well that these drillers make uses more than 4 million gallons of water. 4 million gallons of water per well. And when it comes back, you know, it's full of, you know, who knows what. In fact, they won't tell us what's in the chemical, what the chemicals are in their solution, their fracking fluid, this hazardous waste. Because it's proprietary. We can't know. But when this stuff comes back out, you got to do something with it. So they're taking it to Ohio and they're pumping it underground. In fact, somewhere around 6 million barrels of this stuff from July of 2009 to June of 2010, according to state records. So you're looking at 6 million barrels. I'm like, you know, think about it. All the trucking jobs that then, you know, maybe it's good for the economy, I guess. What happens when one of them starts to leak on the road? What happens? Yeah, I'm worried beyond. I'm afraid of what happens down the road if we continue this mentality that we're not going to oversee them.
Well, and you touched on a problem, Rick. Now, here we are. They've been here several years. We haven't taxed them. The longer they're here, the more apt there is to have an accident. The harder they're going to use our roads, the more apt to have a major accident. And once that happens, yeah, we're going to ask them to pay, but they're probably not going to pay near what they would have and should have if we would have taxed them from the beginning. It just makes no sense, not only from a political standpoint, but from a practical standpoint.
And the thing is, they're already paying
and,
the tax.
And here's you're exactly right. Every other state, and what they do, they take the cost of taxes and they build it into their budget. It's not like it's an undue burden, and in some ways, I would bet there's people within the company that would say, you know what, if we knew what the tax would be, we can project a lot easier what our budget will be next year and the year after. Now they can't do that because they don't know if next year or the year after, if they're going to get hit with a big tax. They don't know that.
Well, it's already in their business plan. They're already charging the consumer that anyway. They're just not paying the tax. They're pocketing it. But here's the other part of this. And Corbett and the Republicans love to say that, well, if we tax them, they won't come. You know, if we put a tax on it, they just won't do it.
Oh, please.
They won't do it. You know what Ohio did? For every barrel of this hazardous waste that comes to their drilling sites or to their deep well disposal sites, they charge 5 cents per barrel to the Ohio drillers. You know what they charge the people out of state? 20 cents. It's just 20 cents a barrel. Now, granted, there were, you know, 80-some thousand barrels, but don't worry about that. Now, understand, Ohio doesn't have much shale drilling in it, but that fee has brought in almost over $78,000 a month because it's cheaper to pay the tax in Ohio than it is to do something here in Pennsylvania. And you go down the list. I mean, there are charges right down the list that, you know, you go, they keep coming. They keep coming.
If I could comment, what I'm about to say isn't quite the same, but it's a corollary issue. You know, the industry, it's like any other industry. They're going to get away with as little as they can. If we allowed them never to pay a tax, they wouldn't pay a tax. However, in West Virginia, they had the same lament. Well, you know what? If you put a tax on us, gee whiz, we don't know. We invested all this money, and we don't know if we can make a profit. And they kept whining and whining and putting pressure on the legislature, and finally the legislature and the governor got their heads together and said, okay, we're listening to you. We'll give you back the whole industry. Any company that wants to leave will give you back every cent that you invested in this state, and you can go on your merry way. And guess how many companies took them up on it? Zero. It's a bluff. They know they can make huge profits, but again, the corporate entity is going to do what they all do. They're going to get away with as little as possible.
You mean as much as possible?
No, as far they're going to get away with
paying as little
taxes as possible.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well? Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service. Service 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
I gotta tell you, I am just looking forward to the Republican convention. I cannot wait to go to the Republican National Convention. And we will be there. We will be going up to New Hampshire when that happens to cover the chaos that I think it's going to be. Because I don't think anybody's going to drop out until at least then. So it should be interesting. And I guess Rick Santorum, it looks like he's going to have a little competition. Looks like our buddy Tricky Ricky Santorum going to get a little competition from the angry white guy vote. David Duke has launched an exploratory committee, to run for president. You know, because that's the first thing you have to do. Got to find out if there's any support. He's going to do a 25 state tour, to drum up that support, according to the Daily Beast. So, does everybody know who David Duke is? The former leader of the Ku Klux Klan? He's now going to be out there running for president. Over the past, you gotta love the fact that he's out there talking to the Tea Party people. You know, he released his David Duke Speaks to the Tea Party video, and I guess, you know, thousands of the Tea Twizzlers have said, you know, we want a guy like you. We need a good guy like you to run for president. So again, he's out there, and I hope he comes to Harrisburg. You know, I hope he comes right here to the Capitol. I would love to see that. Also, did you see the CNN program with Tricky Ricky Santorum on it? A little math help he needs. He got the M's and the T's mixed up. Today he was talking to Ali Vachel, Velshi, I guess that's his name, Velshi, and, you know, talking about jobs. And he claimed that the stimulus resulted in 30 million fewer jobs. He went on to say that the president said he was going to create 280 million jobs, and he only created 40 million jobs. Well, one, the obvious fact is we don't have 40 million jobs in the country. We've only got 310 million people in the country. But aside from that, you know, you could say, well, that was just a mix-up, just a bad, you know, thousands, millions, a little mix-up. But am I the only one who caught the 280 minus 240 is not 30? You know, again, Tricky, we need you to, Think this stuff through. You know, you could be dealing with high negotiations. You make a flub like that, could make you look stupid. Not that this didn't. And in fact, the guy who who's doing the interview goes, hold on, wait a second. Can you restate that? Because I've never heard that in my life. You're going, look, you know, if you're going to be president, you got to, there's some detail problems. Tricky Ricky is now forever the guy who said we created 240 million new jobs. And I wish that were true. I wish, you know, we could have jobs for everybody. And in fact, minimum wage would be like $100 an hour because people would be, I mean, think of it. We got 310 million people in the country, 240 million jobs. Think of the competition for the jobs. Jobs would be competing for workers. Also on the presidential campaign, the Herman Cain train, he said that, you don't need foreign policy experience to know who your friends are and who your enemies are. Which, again, you know, if you're in your neighborhood, you're walking around, yeah, you know who your friends are, you know who your enemies are, and you know what you can do. Difference is we live in a global world. We're members in that. Sometimes you have to deal with your enemies. And, you know, if I take this very short-sighted view that the Herman Cain train is going to take, because, you know, Russia's our enemy. And had we taken that Russia's our enemy stance, you know, during the Cold War, we wouldn't have been talking to them. Understand, there was a bat phone. You know, when problems came up, the two leaders talked to each other. Kind of had some communication. May not have liked each other, but talked. That's important. So knowing who your enemies are one thing, but flipping them off at every occasion, probably not the best thing. And, you know, he says, you know, when he gets elected, he'll bone up on his foreign policy. And that's what I want. I want a guy with on the job training. You know, I want a guy who's going to go, well, I'll figure it out when you put me in power. I'll figure it out when I got my finger on the button. Very, very nice. Gotta love Herman Cain. And of course, Michelle Bachmann never fails to, never fails to deliver on something stupid. She said that she wants the dollar. And, you know, again, going back to this whole gold standard thing that the right is now pushing, which is impossible to go back to. She says that she wants a dollar to be worth the same as it was back in 1911. And I go, Michelle, sorry. A dollar in 1911 had the same buying power is slightly more than $23 today. That's not sane.
She's a little confused about a lot of things, I believe. Did you hear her latest?
Oh.
She said, well, you know, it wouldn't be all that bad if we didn't lift the debt ceiling. You know, according to her, the Treasury could pull some hocus pocus and it would be minimal. No, I don't think so, Michelle. That would be major, major damage to our economy. It would do major, major damage to our credit worthiness. For someone, I mean, we joke about her, Rick, but that kind of ignorance, ignorance is scary.
1-888-520 Rick, back after this.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. This winter's sports season could be the National Hockey League's opportunity to have the spotlight all to itself. With the National Basketball Association's players locked out, and the National Football League staring down a potential short season, sports fans won't have many other options. If the NBA lockout continues into the regular season, it could benefit China. Kobe Bryant and a number of other players are considering taking the show overseas for an exhibition tour. Meanwhile, the NFL has fewer than 3 weeks to reach a settlement before rookies are scheduled to head to training camp. If a settlement can't be reached and get rookies set to train, that will very likely have football fans looking at, if they're lucky, half a season of pro football. The two sides of the football battle have been working all weekend to get a potential new settlement agreement on the table, but formal meetings won't start until today. The answer to solving state deficits could be flipping the current tax structure. Doug Cunningham reports.
Flip it to fix it. A United for a Fair Economy study shows that states could wipe out budget deficits and pay for public services into the future by just flipping the regressive tax structures to more progressive ones. United for a Fair Economy's Karen Kraut.
It doesn't have to be this way. States could really produce a large amount of revenue. They could have an economically sound and sustainable tax system if they flipped their structures, asking that the wealthiest families pay as a share of their income what the lowest income families are currently paying as a share of their income in state and local taxes, and vice versa.
If state tax systems were inverted like that, Kraut says 60% of state income taxpayers would pay the same or even lower state income taxes while preserving public education and other services.
Everyone in the lowest income quintile and the second quintile would see a reduction in the amount of their income that they're paying in state and local taxes. On the flip side, the wealthiest families who are currently not carrying their weight in terms of the share of income they're paying in state and local taxes, they would be asked to pay proportionally more. The idea of constantly giving wealthy people and corporations tax breaks is going to lift all boats has never proven to be true.
The full report on flipping state tax structures to wipe out deficits is at faireconomy.org. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Work it hard to make a left, rich and far away. Father Sir left the caviar, blue dinner, had his bait. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickssmithshow.com. Of course, if you missed any portion of the program, it's all right there on the website for your entertainment, for your convenience. And again, you know, like I said, you can email us, Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Well, this Sunday, with Christine Amanpour, there was an interesting discussion between George Will, the ultra-right-wing columnist, and Georgetown professor Michael Eric Dyson. Which, you know, there's some parts of this that you just go, really? And it really shows the difference of thought on the Constitution. There is this movement in this country that nothing evolves, that nothing can move forward. There's no progress. And you stop and you look at the Constitution, to me, an extremely liberal document, that we can self-rule, we can dictate for ourselves, we don't need to have a king. You know, to me, very forward-looking, very liberal document. And somebody got some problems with it, but, you know, from the beginning, looking forward. And what Dyson does is says, look, you know, we got a problem here. Because George Will said that, and this is the quote, there's a retrospective caste naturally built into our politics. But what has happened today is a large number of Americans, this one including meeting George Will, believe that somewhat promiscuous expansion of government power in recent years raises questions about whether we still have a government of limited, delegated, and enumerative powers. You know, it's that whole smaller, limited government argument that the right keeps pushing. And I keep saying, I don't know that we have this grand, expansive government. I don't know that they've ever done anything that makes me feel less free. You know, I heard someone the other day say, well, you know, the government comes into your backyard and tells you got to put a fence post up because, you know, somebody might trip in your, you know, in your stairwell going down to your basement. I've never had that happen by the government. I've had my insurance company tell me that, a private, for-profit, non-government entity. Yeah, I've had them tell me that, or they won't insure me. A whole difference in people here. But what Dyson says, again, and this is, you know, this is the crux of it. He says, wow, I think this retrospective cast that George Will refers is absolutely right. But there are some gaps, some holes, gulfs, abysses. You read the Constitution and the Congress, but oops, I forgot the part about slavery. You talk about women and people of color who have been distorted, relegated to the margins, and altogether seen as marginal. He says, I think the Constitution is a powerful, living, vibrant document. I think it's been hijacked by people with narrow, vicious, parochial visions. There, right there, are the two differences. You've got the original intent people. We have defined it as what we have made it up to be. It is as we think it is. And then you've got the side where I tend to find myself, that it's an organic document. It changes with the times. And not in a hasty manner, with deliberation. So which is it? I mean, you know, we can go back. I don't know that we can go back to the days of slavery. I don't know that women will be too happy about taking the right to vote away from them. I don't know that, you know, non-landowners who aren't white wouldn't be happy taking their vote away from them, although most people don't vote anyway, so I don't know if most of them would notice. But I think if you took it away from them, they'd probably be very unhappy. But Dyson goes on to say, I think that the assertion that we, of all people, this generation, is somehow vulnerable to rebuff the Constitution is a Hegelian problem. You think that your generation is the greatest generation, and the apotheosis of history finds it a resting place, you point out. Slow down. The point is the Constitution, it's durable. It's powerful. Because of its flexibility, black people and others are able to argue their way into an American identity in a vision for democracy that initially was barred. So I think it's powerful, and I agree. I think it is a very powerful document. But again, it goes back to this anti-evolution movement. Intelligent design sounds a lot like original intent. It's the exact, it was all right there from the beginning. And we are just living the plan. Instead of saying, you know, that over time things evolve. I was talking to a guy today. Not happy that Carlisle is going through the Grand Road Diet. Which, you know, I don't care one way or another. Maybe it encourages people to ride their bikes, I'm hoping. But the original intent there is to keep trucks out of the city. But he was animate. Don't like it. I don't want it. It's dumb. And I said, well, maybe for you, but some people, I see a lot of people riding their bikes, and it's going to be a good thing for some people. But it's this change. And as I talked to him, it was more about the change than it was about the functionality. It was more that things are changing. And it's that very, and it's something that's very conservative. I mean, the conservative mindset is no change. We're tied up in our institutions. We're tied up in our belief structures. And we've got our fingers in our ears, our eyes over our hands, and we're never going to change. Or maybe I'm wrong.
Well, they'll tell you, Rick. Their argument is, well, you know, there's certain fundamental things that never do change. Depending on what you're talking about, that's probably true. But in a big sense, that's certainly not true.
You know, at the end of the day, and I look at this, and again, the argument is there. Going back to the original intent, and I ask the question, you know, how many women want their vote taken away from them? How many non-landowners want their vote taken away from them? And I love this argument for the enumeration of powers. It's got to be specifically limited. Got to be written right there. Even though they put in some wide latitude with the Commerce Clause. And there are some who believe that the Constitution is nothing more than an economic treaty between the states. That we agree, you know, on these things, but it's nothing more than an economic treaty, and that the states have all the rights that aren't explicitly enumerated. Again, anti-evolutionary. You know, when I look at us in the global trading world, how is it possible that we are going to be 50 individual little nations competing against each other before we get into the global arena? You know, this Boeing thing is another division of the working class. And it's meant to be. The right has figured this out. It's another way to divide the North and the South, you know, the Northwest from the South. It's another way to divide union, non-union, when the reality is this is about right and wrong. It's about a company, and again, you know, they've got the freedom. They have the freedom to move wherever they want, as long as it's not for retaliating against workers and their right to strike. And these people came out on numerous occasions, blatantly in the media, which shows you how arrogant or stupid, you pick, arrogant or stupid, one of the two, maybe a little bit of both, came out in the media and said, this is why we're doing it. And thought that nobody was going to react. And all we keep hearing from the right trying to defend these morons is that, well, you know, it's that union thug NLRB that Obama done put in because he's bought and paid for by labor. Really? Show me which of labor's priorities Obama has put front and center. The Employee Free Choice Act was labor's number one legislative priority. It didn't even get a consideration. It was never brought to the floor. It was after the election. It was barely talked about. So where is that? You know, where's that? I don't see him. I don't see him out, you know, fucking, you know, bumping shoulders in public with Trumka or McEntee or any of those folks. I do see him out with Jeffrey Immelt, the big outsourcer from GE. I do see him out with David Cote, the guy who's the CEO of Honeywell, who kicked out, you know, those workers in Metropolis, Illinois. I see that. Not seeing him buddy-buddy up with any blue-collar folk. He's not bellying up to the bar with me. I like the guy. Don't get me wrong. I'll vote for him again in November, probably. But the reality is to say that he's bought and paid for by big labor is just ludicrous. But what it does is it's got that frame. It's the simple-minded frame. That the right can eat some red meat for the radical right. Who are anti-worker. And you keep pounding that message on that, mm-hmm. on the right-wing media structure, all that talk radio that's everywhere. It's invasive everywhere. And people start to believe it. Average, everyday working folks. Now, union people that I've talked to recently say, well, you know, maybe the NLRB did go a little too far for protecting your rights. You know, Where's the venom? Where's the anger? Where's the outrage? You know, if one piece of legislation even has a hint of coming up about taking your right to bear arms away, just a hint, just a whiff of it comes up, there's national outrage. The NRA has all their you know, their members and their minions faxing, doing all kind of craziness. But take away your rights at work? Where's the national media attention? Doesn't exist because they want to take your rights away too. Because remember, I told you, all of the big CEO numbers, those folks at the very top, the folks doing real well in the CEO suites, the top ones were from media companies, the messengers, the people who are in control of who gets on the air, what content gets on the air. They're taking in nice chunks of change. So, you know, there's part of me that doesn't blame people. If all you're hearing is one side, if all you're hearing is free trade is good, free trade is good, free trade is good, you're going to think, hey, free trade must be good. But you look at the history of free trade, you look at all the things that have happened, all the job losses, the loss of a working middle class, all gone. You know, a guy with a high school education and somebody who was good with his hands could make a decent living, could make a family-sustaining wage and be respected. We're losing that. That brain drain is already happening. And what amazes me about the situation with Boeing, and this is something nobody's talking about, the folks in South Carolina do not have the skill set to build those planes. Boeing is training them. Nowhere else is that happening. You're not seeing big corporations taking on large numbers of workers and training them for a craft. You're not. Unless you can exploit them, unless you can get them for less wages, unless you can make sure that they're pliable and they're not going to organize and they're not going to ask for too much. I mean, that's the amazing thing to me. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this. Wow.
ocean of red. Rick Smith.
At long last, America's overdue withdrawal from Afghanistan has begun. The tide of war is receding, declared President Obama as he announced that 10,000 troops would come home this year and 20,000 more next year. That tide has been a deadly one for our country. 1,562 of our troops killed, more than 11,000 maimed, many horribly, their lives shattered, and almost half a trillion of our tax dollars siphoned from crucial needs here at home. And what did we buy with this precious outlay? An Afghan government that is flagrantly corrupt and embarrassingly inept. A nation that remains impoverished, largely illiterate, anarchic, split into factious ethnic groupings, and roiled by an unresolved civil war that's been simmering and occasionally boiling over for nearly 40 years. Chances are good that it will spiral into civil war again, no matter what we do. We won't try to make Afghanistan a perfect place, Obama said, apparently with no irony in his voice. Yet, the withdrawal he spoke of is proceeding at an excruciatingly slow and costly pace. For more than a year, we'll continue to dump $10 billion a month into that war, money desperately needed for nation building in America. Even with Obama's announced reduction in our forces, 67,000 U.S. troops will still be in Afghanistan at the end of next year. And despite his pledge of a total military drawdown by 2015, it will cost taxpayers about $8 billion a year after that to meet his commitment to recruit, train, and fund a 300,000-member Afghan army and police force. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is a classic case of throwing good money after bad. Far worse, for at least three more years, we'll be throwing more American lives into a war that the president has declared to be over. America has achieved its goals there, he told us. Fine, so let's leave. Now,
what do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
People who voted for Corbett and the rest of these Republicans, I think they're feeling right now that they got fooled. And again, you know, I'm hoping that the folks who get harmed by the budget that this guy has rammed through with the help of his Republican minions, I'm hoping the folks who get harmed by this are the ones who stand up and fight back. I can hope, can't I? Because at the end of this, they did exactly what we knew they were going to do. They went after the people who were on their knees already. They went after the people who were on the ground in the fetal position, people who were incapable of fighting back, which, again, you know, like the cowards that most of them are, that's what you would expect. That's what I would expect. You go after the guy who's down, like Perry's bill, the House Bill 916. You're going to slap somebody who's unemployed. Again, I go back to the Reagan years. You know, one of the things that he did, taxing unemployment benefits, your policy, your high-dollar policy caused most of the jobs to leave because imports were cheaper. And then you're going to tax those folks who were harmed by your policy? I mean, the ultimate slap in the face. Yes, I'm going to rape you and I'm going to charge you for the condom. You know, that's kind of the mentality. Amazing stuff. Or, you know, I'm not getting into it. Just nuts. Just absolutely nuts. And you look at the fact that we have failed to invest in our infrastructure across the board. 30 years of tax breaks for the wealthy, 30 years of corporate handouts, 30 years of privatization. And earlier, Mike called and, you know, was saying, look, you know, water. Water's the big thing. And most of our water supply has been privatized. And what happens? Well, you know, it crumbles. Nobody upgrades it. There's no incentive. We're just going to profit from it here and now. Well, the Natural Resources Defense Council, they released their annual report titled Testing the Waters. And what they do is, you know, they gather all of the testing data and they look at why and they look at, you know, who's, you know, doing what. Turns out that, you know, bacteria and wastewater account for nearly 75% of all beach closings and advisories last year. The fact that we have a failing infrastructure, the fact that contaminated sewer, you know, contaminated stormwater. Like where I lived in Cleveland, they had the sewage treatment plant also took on the storm drains. So you have all of the stuff that comes from your house into the sewage into the sewer treatment plant also has the storm water coming in from the sewers. So if you had a big storm, you always overflowed the capacity of the sewer and the stuff coming in, the stuff. And that stuff, you know, basically what you put in your toilet ends up in the water supply, ends up in the lake and in the rivers, and you end up with all this bacteria. So they went down the list of the states who had, you know, the top 10 states who had the worst. Number 10 was Alabama, which, you know, I guess exceeded their standards, by 10% at the time. And they don't close their beaches, which I thought was interesting. They just put up an advisory so you can go swim in the fecal water if you want. Not me, thanks. California was 9, Maine was 8, Connecticut 7, Wisconsin, which I was surprised at, because you always think of Wisconsin as, you know, pristine and very clean environment. They were one of the Great Lakes leaders with the most advisories and closings. In fact, the report said, while we do not know all the sources of contaminations at Great Lake beaches, we do know that aging and failing infrastructure throughout the region is probably the most prevalent factor. So again, what you've got is you've got a failing infrastructure. Illinois was number 5, again, with the same scenario that I told you about with Cleveland. All this wastewater that comes into the sewage treatment plant, causes these overages, and you got all this, you know, all these floaters coming out of the water into your water supply. Michigan, Indiana were 4 and 3. And, of course, Ohio was 2, which, you know, like I said, Cleveland, they've been getting hit with it. Plus, they've got these mussels that have invaded, that I shouldn't say invaded, that people put in to kill some of the bacteria. They've now, the mussels have now taken over. And they now have, you know, just done this. There's this kind of algae. Evidently, it's toxic that they produce. Because they bring all of these nutrients to the shoreline. So you get all of this kind of blue-green algae that, you know, covers a good portion of the lake. And evidently it's kind of toxic. Now, when I was a kid, you didn't go anywhere near Lake Erie because, you know, they had all the steel mills going. They had all the benzene spills and they had a whole bunch of carcinogens that just kind of naturally ended up in the water. So nobody ever swam in Lake Erie. You know, the fish had like 17 eyes and tumors all over them. Which is why we had the Clean Water Act. I mean, where I grew up in Cleveland, the home of the Clean Air and Clean Water Act. I mean, it was places like Cleveland that they passed this because the water was, you couldn't go anywhere near it. The air was horrible. I had asthma for most of my life as a kid. As a society, we said clean air, clean water, good thing. And we worked at cleaning that up. Now it seems that this whole deregulation, this whole idea of moving us backwards, has taken some hold. And the Republicans have really done a nice job. You got to give them credit. Congratulations. Good for you. You're winning this. Sadly, all of us are going to lose and die from it. But, you know, congratulations. Early victory. And it scares me. I mean, I worry about what's going to happen with my kids. I don't want them to. You know, stop and think about how long it took us to get lead out of gasoline. Even though right from the beginning, we knew lead was a horrible thing to be putting in gasoline. We knew they knew right from the beginning. And do you know why they put lead in the gasoline? Because it helped stop the knocking of the engine. It didn't make the gasoline any better. It just helped kind of stop the knocking. And they actually had another additive that was less harmful that did the same thing. But guess what? It was a bit more expensive, a couple of pennies. And you know, you can't take that from profit. So, sorry, children, you're just going to have, you know, what's 10 or 12 IQ points? And when you eat the lead chips in the paint, well, what's another 20 IQ points? Which, again, you know, I go back and I stop and I think about this stuff. Look at the people who are leading our government right now. They were the kids of that era who were sniffing the gasoline fumes and who were eating the paint chips. Those are the people that are leading us. Kind of scares me. But going back to the NRDC's testing waters thing, they said, you know, basically the four culprits were the storm water runoff that I went through, sewage overflows because we have aging sewer treatment plants, agricultural runoff, which is all the phosphorus and all the manure and all the stuff that's, you know, rolling off into the water. And, you know, stuff, you know, wildlife septic systems, you know, boating waste, things like that would be the fourth cause of it. You know, the catch-all category, everything else. The report says we need about $300 billion over the next 20 years for water and wastewater infrastructure in the country. $63.6 billion of which is needed for this sewage overflow thing. Are we going to do it? Of course we're not. We need to make sure that the millionaires and billionaires get their tax cuts. We need to make sure that we protect the very wealthy. We can't raise taxes. Are you kidding? We'll privatize it. There we go. And now you look at what's coming across the ocean. You know, you remember the whole, I know it's so old news. It was just a couple of months ago, but so old news. Remember the whole tsunami thing in Japan? Well, they're saying that we're going to start seeing all of their stuff, you know, all of the toys and all of the buildings and all of the, you know, all the stuff that's coming from Japan, all going to end up on the shores of California. The one guy said, can you imagine San Francisco being put through a shredder, a big grinder? He said the area north of Tokyo was basically shredded, and we're going to see boats, parts of homes, lots of plastic bottles, chair cushions, kids' toys, everything coming this way. And guess what? Here's the best part. Some of it will probably be contaminated with radiation. Oh, how wonderful. Isn't that great news? I think it is. But at the end of this, we're not prepared for it. Not prepared at all. Why? Because we need tax cuts for billionaires, folks. Again, no planning, no vision, no foresight, no thought for tomorrow. Carpe diem. Isn't that what we're told? It's about the here and now. Save the day. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. That's the number. If you missed any portion of the program, also, you can go to the website, thericksmithshow.com, download our podcast, which is there for you to take along with you on demand, of course. And you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this with Ken Bizanet, Talk Radio News Service.
This is why we fight. Why we run away. This is why. This is why we fight.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
It's going down before you die.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. That'll find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Our good friend Ken Bazinet, Talk Radio News Service. Ken, thanks for taking time for us.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. Did you have a good weekend?
It went by quickly.
A wonderful holiday weekend. A good time with the family and all that, I hope.
Yeah, lots of showing my independence.
Beautiful. So what's going on in the big city there?
Well, we had an unscheduled appearance, or should I say hastily called appearance, by President Obama late in the day today. And he said that, in his words, quote, he wants to do something big, close quote, to tackle the deficit and debt problem. Not just agree, for instance, to a quick fix, like the approach GOP Senator John Cornyn pitched with his proposal to only do a, quote, mini deal, close quote, for now. Basically, the president is saying, look, we've got a lot of stuff on the table here. Over the weekend, he put portions of Medicare and Medicaid on the table. Now, the good news is it's not anything that's going to affect anyone's benefits, and it's not anything that's going to raise anyone's premiums. What it is the president believes that he has found some places in those entitlement programs where there is still waste, duplication, and just, you know, outright fat in the budget. So he wants to go after that. By putting those on the table, he has given the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, an opportunity to go back to his constituency, particularly the Tea Party people, theoretically, and say, look, we know that we were going to hold the line, but he's put the big enchilada on the table now, and he's going to take it off if we don't give him something. So it's a really, there's a huge dynamic going on right now. On top of that, the president has invited all the leaders from Congress, both chambers, both parties, back to the White House Thursday evening to try and, you know, get a breakthrough, hammer some more stuff out, and just make it clear that this has got to get done.
Well, it's got to get done, but here again, I mean, what you've just laid out, again, another cave. And as, you know, as Dick Cheney said, that's what Democrats do. I have not heard Boehner or anyone on the Republican side, maybe you know of some that say we have to have tax increases, we have to have revenue enhancements to go along with this.
Cornyn.
All I hear is Boehner saying, if it's on the menu, we're not going to be there.
Yeah, Cornyn and Senators Cornyn and Senators McCain over the weekend said that there has to be a review and reapproach to some portions of the tax code. Very, very extreme, you know, coded language for, you know, we've got to give them something. And those are the first two who I've heard say that.
And I'm sure that there's some who are thinking that, but the reality is you know, we can only go to the much regarded office of waste, fraud, and abuse so often, because I don't know that there's all that much there. And if it has been, why haven't we rooted it out in the past?
Well, see, that's the million-dollar question, is that for all the reforms that we've had with particularly Medicare in the last three decades, I suppose, that is kind of surprising that there's still some room to cut there in the eyes of the administration. But, you know, again, this is, you know, it broke over the weekend. Not many people know about it, so we're going to go through an education process here. You and I are going to learn, you know, as well as the American people, exactly what he's talking about here. I'm talking about the president, obviously.
Right.
And I want to make one thing clear. The way the story was broke this weekend, and as I understand it in the debrief that I got from a trusted source today, it is only on the table if the other side is going to talk about getting rid of some of these excessive tax loopholes at this point.
So would you characterize this, you know, Bill Clinton, I guess, over the weekend said, you know, the advice that he'd give him is don't blink. Is this a blink?
I don't know. Microcosm, it's probably a blink. In the macro, anyone who thinks that there isn't going to be serious reform to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security in the next decade is only fooling themselves.
Right. Well, this is why, again, you know, you go back to that health care bill. I wish it would have been a Medicare for all system where we would have strengthened Medicare by bringing in younger people.
I will never believe that if he didn't fight for it, that we could not have gotten a public option.
Thank you. Because most people I talk to on the left say, you know, it wasn't even possible. There's just no way it could have gotten done. And I say, well, if it wasn't possible, we didn't even try. So how do we know what was possible?
That's right. What I refer to that as the 60 vote argument. I noticed that there's a whole constituency of people on Twitter who, no matter what Barack Obama says, it's gospel, and he cannot be criticized. And if he is, they fly off the handle. That's their argument. Their argument is, you tell me where the 60 votes were. And my answer to that is, well, I don't know where the 60 votes were because we never had, it never was played out in the court of public opinion. Yep. The man never took a shot at it, you know?
So this, I guess Thursday is going to be another big meeting. We should have more information then.
I'd like to believe that something will trickle out after that meeting Thursday evening. Listen, if there's a breakthrough, neither side is going to want to hold that to themselves.
Right.
You have to believe both sides are getting incredible amounts of behind-the-scenes pressure from their constituencies.
Yeah, because they're going to both want to spin it to where they won. I understand that.
Not just that, but they're going to. This might become old Washington again, where both sides win. You know, I mean, that's what it comes down to. If the Republican leadership comes back with a deal that includes the $400 billion or so in revenue creators, i.e. eliminating tax loopholes, and President Obama indeed goes into Medicare and or Medicaid, I guarantee you both sides are going to declare victory.
Right. But here's the thing. I mean, you just made an interesting point, going after tax loopholes. How is that? How is taking away handouts to BP and handouts to CEOs with their jets, how is that raising taxes?
It's not. It's raising revenue. But it's not. And that's the other argument that the Republican leadership should have been making from the beginning to soften up it, the hardcore constituency within the House of Representatives, mainly the Tea Party. They should have been making that argument from the beginning. We're not talking about raising anyone's taxes here. We're talking about getting rid of loopholes, frankly, for corporations that none of us really think need them anymore.
Especially the ones who ship jobs overseas. I mean, that would have been the first place I hammered on.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to figure a way to penalize those companies one way or the other.
I agree.
When I say penalize, I just say have them pay more.
Absolutely.
You know, if you want to send American jobs overseas, this is a free country. You can do that, but you're going to have to ante up something in exchange.
That's why I'm a big fan of tariffs.
And then before you know it, they're keeping the jobs here at home.
Isn't that the point?
It sure is.
Well, here you go. But it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out this week, especially since most people are on vacation. I find it interesting that this is the week we may see something.
Yeah, that's a very astute observation. But they let this thing go so long, you know. I mean, you know, there is the best thing that the American people have going for them on this whole deal is that it's potentially going to ruin the vacations of congressmen, senators and the president. That's the impetus, I think, as much as anything else.
And that's almost some comfort. But for me, I'm very cynical. There's part of me who thinks this, much like the Cantor storming out of the meeting when they brought up tax increases, I think this was all staged and all part of the plan.
Yeah, that's a pretty good example, Rick, but I got to tell you something. The conservative, ultra-conservative talk show radio host that at the 5 o'clock hour hung up on me today, that was cynical.
Well, okay. Well, there you go. I'll try not to hang up on you.
Okay? Well, you wouldn't, because this was the tone and tenor of the conversation we were having. He wanted me to say that by the best thing that could happen is a payroll tax cut, and that would inspire Wall Street and corporations to create more jobs, to which I responded, we've given these guys more incentives than anyone else. We basically gave them a socialist bailout, and they're not creating any jobs.
Well,
and then I segged into, you know, what came out over the weekend was the New York Times published salaries.
Yep.
The median salary, $10.8 million.
Yeah, we talked about it. It's ludicrous, isn't it?
I dared to make the point that what if they only made $8 million and they used the other $2 million for 20 jobs each in those 200 companies?
Or what if he taxed them?
I was speaking some kind of communist heresy by saying that.
Well, you were to them, of course.
That's absurd. But I hear you. I know, because the last thing I heard was liberal drivel, and then they cut the commercial.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. What if we had a good socialist tax code, like under Dwight David Eisenhower?
That's the thing, right?
Yep.
I hear you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't socialist. This is a democratic market society. There is nothing wrong with having a safety net in a democratic market society.
That's an excellent point.
It saves us from the Great Depression, and quite frankly, it's probably the only thing that's saving a whole class of people right now in our country from this thing.
Yep, absolutely. Ken, I appreciate the time. I look forward to the reports going forward the rest of the week. Exciting stuff. Thanks so much, Ken.
I think you've got me Thursday, so we'll do it again.
All right, can't wait.
Be well.
Ken Bissonnette, Talk Radio News Service, and now to find out what's going on across the street. What do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. I think it would be appropriate just to take a minute and remember the Battle of Gettysburg. We, for those of you who don't know, I'd say we're about 40 miles from the battlefield. And I, as a young kid, I visited it several times. And I think we need, if we're going to learn from our learn in the future some of the lessons of history, I think we need to remember our history. The Battle of Gettysburg was probably the most important battle in the history of this country. 51,000 casualties in 3 days, just to give a perspective. In the whole Vietnam War, I think we had 58. Horrendous, horrendous casualties. Supposedly, after the first day, the Confederate forces had the advantage. However, General Lee and some of his generals made some tactical mistakes on the second, and thus that led to Pickett's Charge, and we all know what happened in Pickett's Charge. They were slaughtered. The Union forces won it. The importance is that if the Confederates would have won that battle, probably what would have happened, the Union forces would have then retreated to the capital. And there are historians that say probably what Confederate forces would have done, they were unimpeded to the capital of Pennsylvania at that time, which was Philadelphia. And if they would have taken control of Philadelphia, they probably could have sued for peace, because at that time the war was unpopular, they were having war riots, and in fact the very re-election of Abraham Lincoln was in question. So I think we need to remember what happened at Gettysburg and how important it is. Literally, I do believe, and a lot of historians believe, that the Confederates would have won that battle. The United States, as we know it, probably would not exist. Good article coming out of New York, Rick, CNN Money. Tim Geithner, we hear all this talk about lifting the debt ceiling. According to Geithner, this is what Geithner is saying. Congress does nothing by August 2nd, the consequences are expected to be costly. The government reached its legal bargaining limit on May 16th and has been taking extraordinary measures, quote-unquote, since that time to keep the country out of default. If the debt ceiling isn't raised, Treasury would not be able to pay nearly half of the $80 million payments it needs to make every month. Let me repeat that. If the debt ceiling isn't raised, Treasury would not be able to pay nearly half of the $80 million payments it needs to make every month, according to an estimate this week by budget experts at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Treasury Secretary Geithner would have to choose which bills to pay and which ones to put off.
I wonder which ones he would pay. Would he pay the ones that go to the folks at Goldman Sachs, since most of our debt is tied up in T-bills? Because I think there would be a race on it, much like during the Depression when the banks were failing. Everybody ran to their banks and said, give me the money.
Well, I'm
and
glad,
there's no money there.
I'm glad you asked that question. The speculation is, according to this article, speculation is that Geithner would choose to pay bond investors first so that the country could avoid formal default. At the same time, the consequences of that would be he would have to indefinitely delay payments to everything from Social Security recipients to government contractors to federal worker and military service members. In other words, it would be an unmitigated disaster. And I think some of these Republican candidates, I think they better wise up, because they are, I understand it would probably hurt. To some degree, it would hurt the chances of the president, because it would hurt the economy. But I believe in the end, the American people would hold the Republican Party responsible.
You hope?
I do believe
but
it.
But like any good hostage situation, you know, they're playing their angle. And again, you know, the Democrats have that, you know, that flaw. Because Democrats are basically flawed. They care about those people. Like those old people. They care about those children and those poor people. Republicans aren't burdened with that flaw. They can give a rat's behind. And that's how we end up in these situations.
Well, it's one thing to posture for political reasons, Rick. It's another thing if you want to be the president of the United States. And when you have Republicans running for president who dangerously very much talk down the consequences of not lifting the debt ceiling, I mean, that should scare every American. I mean, we're talking about some very, very serious consequences. And if you want to be president of the United States, you better do better than that. But time will tell. I'm hoping it's just political posturing, but we shall see. Some good news coming out for the Liquor Control Board. The Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board is hosting a banner this year for wine and liquor stores. The board reported Tuesday that sales for the year that ended Thursday set a record of nearly $2 billion. The agency also transferred a record $496 million to the state treasury to help finance other state services. That's good news. Whether or not that translates into more votes for not selling, we shall see. I have my doubts, although that might persuade some moderate Republicans to oppose the sale. Again, only time will tell. Court orders Harrisburg controller and treasurer to reinstate direct deposit payroll system. We've been talking about this story now for, I think this is the third time. The Dauphin County Court of Common Pleas has ordered the immediate reinstatement of Harrisburg's direct deposit payroll system that follows existing procedures for employees. The court also ordered Controller Dan Miller and Treasurer Paul Wambach to furnish by July 6th all documents, approvals, written consents, and electronic signatures Mayor Linda Thompson's office needs to reinstate direct deposit. I think that was the right move.
What day is it they're supposed to reinstate it?
July 6th.
All right.
I believe that's tomorrow. Okay. One final article, Harrisburg Patriot. Harrisburg's final Act 47 plans to go public on Friday. The plan will be posted at the State Department of Community and Economic Development website. That's www.newpa.com and online at the Novak Consulting Group website. The Act 47 team privately will introduce the plan to Mayor Linda Thompson at 9 a.m. on Friday and review it with City Council at 3 p.m. in a private session. Council is expected to vote on the plan at its next legislative meeting at 6 p.m. on July 12th in Council Chambers. The plan has been adjusted to reflect some community wishes, but its major fiscal initiatives are still in place, according to Julie Novak, the Act 47 team coordinator. For better or for worse, Rick, it looks like Act 47 has a good chance of passing.
We will see. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. 1-888-520-RICK, back after this.
Thought back to America. Rick Smith.
On July 5th, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, "It should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just and peaceful labor relations and industry." Hailed as the Magna Carta of labor, once the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law, workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember to check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. Again, you can download our podcast if you missed any portion of the program. The Borowitz Report. CNN, which enjoyed blockbuster ratings for its nonstop coverage of the Casey Anthony case, said today it would cover a future Casey Anthony murder trial if and when Nancy Grace kills her. While network executives were cautiously optimistic about their chances of another murder trial ratings bonanza, one network source said, "I just saw Nancy in the hall, and she could blow at any second." Miss Grace appeared more unhinged than usual on her primetime show this evening, in which she pronounced herself the fourth branch of government. She said there are four branches, the executive, the legislative, the judicial, and Nancy Grace. The prejudicial, she said, glaring into the screen. Across the country, there were several reports of incidents of CNN viewers being severely burned by fire shooting from Nancy Grace's nostrils. In other legal news, former IMF chairman Dominique Strauss-Kahn told reporters, "Whew, it's a good thing I didn't send that maid pictures of my penis. I could be in real trouble right now." Elsewhere, Twitter today was valued at $7 billion, or $1 for every hour of time it has wasted. So good, you know, crazy. She got off, you know, good for her. I could, you know, sad scenario either way. But if I'm ever convicted, if I'm ever on trial, I want it to be in either California or Florida.
Well, I can tell you, Nancy Grace was not a happy camper. There was fire coming out of her. And by the way, Strauss-Kahn, I don't know if you picked up on it, he's now out of jail. They left him out of jail.
Well, thank you for that. That was a couple of days ago, though.
Yes, it was.
A little old news.
Since we didn't have a show Friday.
And they're probably gonna drop charges. They're having some real problems with the woman's testimony.
Well, they found some things in her background where she wasn't.
And again.
But that is...
Break
well,
again.
If I can throw a little note of caution there, that doesn't mean he isn't guilty.
As I said, raped again.
It just makes it harder for prosecution to prove it.
Yeah. Anyway, remember we talked not too long ago about the people who in Florida and Orlando who were feeding people, heaven forbid, without a permit, and they got arrested, thrown in jail. Remember that? Well, it turns out that they have now figured out a clever way to not get arrested anymore. They're just not going to do it in the parks because the statute, you know, said that you can't feed more than 25 people without a permit. In these parks. So what they've done is they're not going to go to, you know, parks anymore. They're going to go to City Hall. And I think it's a great idea. You know, bring all the people into City Hall. And I wish that, you know, folks would do more of that. Because at the end of the day, those are the people who need to see the chaos and the grief and the strife that their policies have caused. Don't be relegated to a park. Take your grievances right to the hall. Sit right here on the steps. It's your house. Start feeding people in it. I think that is an absolutely great idea and good for them. Good stuff. West Hartford, Connecticut, a nice, you know, intelligent story. Police pulled this guy over. Evidently wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Evidently in Connecticut, the seatbelt violation is a primary stop kind of thing. They got him out of the car, said, "Come on, get out of the car, you know. You don't have your seatbelt on, we're going to have to give you a ticket." So he gets out of the car, and what falls out of the pant leg? A couple of bags of heroin and cocaine that he had between his buttocks. And when he got out of the car, you know, it fell right out. So not only did he get a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt, he went to jail for illegal possession, out on bond, of course, He's due in court on July 14th. And good, you know, just what we need, more stupid criminals. And my, when I read the story, my question was, is, you know, if I were a heroin addict or, you know, coke addict, would I, especially the cocaine, would I really want to be sniffing the cocaine that was between his cheeks there? Probably not. Not my thing. Well, some people, well, maybe.
Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. Also, to show how important education is, and, you know, kind of take it back to the budget here. You know, here in this state, we're cutting education programs. We're cutting the hand up that folks get, you know, the welfare to work program. We're slashing that, especially the GED program. In Texas, since we want to be like Texas, a 79-year-old woman who was a resident of Texas, she went back to school after her great-grandson said, "Grandma, go back to school. Get some credentials. Have a piece of paper to fill space on the wall." So she went, got her GED, and great for her. She said math was the hardest part for her. She failed it three times, but she has now completed her education. Oh, and good for her. 79 years
79, old. 79, God love her.
You know,
there you go.
You know, like the person not too long ago, 99 years old. Good for them. It never, shows how important education
absolutely,
is.
Absolutely. Never too old to get an education, ever.
But, you know, here in this state, we've decided that we're going to cut some of those programs so that there's no pathway for that. And that infuriates me.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if you heard it today. They just announced Penn State is the most expensive state university in the country right now. Thank you, Governor Corbett.
Well, there you go. Don't you feel so good to know that we're number one in something?
Did you catch his commercial over the weekend, Rick?
Who's?
Tom Corbett. He did a commercial, public service commercial about watching out for the elderly, and I thought, you hypocrite. You big, fat hypocrite.
See, I don't watch TV, wow. So I don't think anybody should watch TV.
His budget has hurt the very people, which he says in a public announcement, obviously done for political purposes, that he cares so much about. Well, you know what? The proof is in the pudding.
Well, you know, at the end of it, up
caring
is down.
Caring is as caring does.
Up is down, front is back. We now live in the rabbit hole.
Is it any wonder people are cynical of government? Wow.
Again, you know, are we surprised that it fails when you put people like that in charge? I'm not. Anyway, I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night, same bat time, same bat channel. See you then.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the blood sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
I can tell you real quick. I can tell you really quick. Yeah, no, he's got a very elaborate argument, which I think makes a lot of intuitive sense. And it comes up over and over and over again today when you're talking about things like who owns the... Oh, this is gross. Who owns the polyp that was removed from my colon? Sorry. Sorry! But, I mean, this is what's going on. All of our tissues are stored now, right? I mean, there's law... Yeah, okay. Right. Well, no, but these are like pathological specimens, right? And they turn them into very lucrative commodities, right? There's a case by a guy in California, John Moore,